Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the program, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Senator Judy Schwenk about the Democrats' jobs plan. And yes, they've got a pretty decent plan, some things they got a problem with, but for the most part, an actual plan, other than the same old garbage we've been having to put up with for the last 30 years, an actual, oh my goodness, a plan! PA Works Now is the name of the plan, and we're going to talk a little bit about that with her. Also in the second hour, Lori Clawson from the Daily Kos labor page going to be here talking about all that is labor. And also in the second hour, Patrick Kelly, Secretary Treasurer of the Teamsters Union Local 952 out in Orange County, California, going to be here talking about the cross-border trucking issue as the border, you know, the Obama administration kind of arm twisted into opening up the southern border to Mexican domicile trucks. They're trying to put the brakes on it right now, trying to hold this up. Because once it opens, once the floodgates open, I don't know that you can put the genie back in the bottle. The hope is we can stop this. The hope is that this pilot program that they have proposed and are moving forward with, hopefully we can stop it. And look, at the end of the day, you got to give the Mexican government credit. They know where the American squeal point is. They went after agriculture. They slapped tariffs on a whole bunch of agricultural goods, 92 of them, if I'm not mistaken, billions of dollars. We blinked. We squealed. We gave in. We caved. And to me, the lesson there is tariffs probably not a bad idea. Maybe you use that carrot and stick mentality with other countries instead of these bizarre free trade agreements that do nothing but ship good-paying American jobs out of the country and import cheap plastic crap from anywhere around the world that not really all that much cheaper and definitely less quality. And on Friday, hey, you know, mark it on your calendar, Obama will be signing the three job-killing free trade agreements. And again, you know, I guess we need more. We need more of the same medicine. Eventually, I guess we will kill it on our own. So, hooray, hooray, another Democrat stabbed you in the back. Yesterday, the Real ID Act stomped down here in the state Senate. Good for them. Today, the talk is voter ID or voter suppression. So tomorrow in Harrisburg, there's going to be a rally at, I believe it's 10:45 tomorrow morning, Capitol Rotunda, the East Wing there. There's going to be a rally on this House Bill 934, the voter suppression bill. It's going to be hosted by the folks at Protect Our Vote Coalition. There's going to be a woman there who's 93 years old. This is my problem with this whole, you know, it's such a simplistic argument. Well, you know, it's not very hard for you to show an ID. You know, you show an ID when you do this stuff, and you show an ID when you do that stuff. Did anybody ever show an ID? How many people show an ID every time they use their credit card? You know, how many people do that? Not many. But this idea that, well, you should have to show your ID, even though this woman, this 93-year-old woman, has been voting since she's voted every presidential election since 1940. Since 1940, she's going to lose her right to vote because she's not going to have the state ID card. And look, I don't know that how many years it's probably been since she's driven, 20, 30, 93 years old. And I think of my grandmother who hasn't driven in probably at least 10 years, probably a little more, because getting a little older, reflexes not so good. Not that they were that great when she was driving when she was younger. Had her share of bang-ups. But no license. You're going to make her find her way into downtown Cleveland? Because, of course, they shut all the regional license centers down years ago. Cost-cutting, got to do this stuff. Centralized, we need bigger, centralized locations. And I think about this. I think about the elderly. I think about the poor. I think about folks who, are never going to have a car, don't want a car, and have no need for a driver's license. Should that preclude them from voting? And you think about all the years that it's worked up until this point. Now, look, for me, I personally don't have a problem with me showing my ID because why? I'm young enough. I have no problem. I'm still driving. I have no problem to get out and get it. What happens when I get to my grandmother's age? It's easy to think the here and now. It's easy to think the tip of the nose. And the truth of the matter is anything proposed by Mad Cow Darrell Metcalf, I'm against just on its face. It's not anything that this guy would propose, flat wrong. Just insane. So tomorrow, 10:45, Capitol Rotunda, East Wing, worth coming down and supporting the folks who want to fight back against this voter suppression. We will be there, and tomorrow night I'm sure we'll have a guest from the coalition there. So I don't know if you've been seeing this whole move by the radical right, the anti-Obama crowd, trying to tie the occupation movement with the president, trying to tie it with the Democrats. Fox News, Fox Business News, this Stuart Varney is his name. Today he said that the Occupy Wall Street protesters were the shock troops of the Obama administration and that they've put out a manifesto. They want far-left solutions to the nation's problems, according to Varney. He goes on to say, and the president is embracing the far-left. He's making them into Obama's shock troops. And I go, really? Because, when I heard Obama comparing them to the T-Twits. And I'm going, the folks that I've met are much more intelligent than most T-Twizzlers and less concerned with themselves than society as a whole. So I'm not quite getting that whole comparison there. But amazingly, this guy thinks that they want to abolish the rich, want to get rid of them. They want to tax them out of existence. It's pretty amazing stuff. You go on to look at the same Fox News channel, the same Fox people who just love to go out and make the most bizarre comparisons. They use the American Nazi Party chairman, this Rocky Sadua, who I guess praised the Wall Street occupiers, praised the Wall Street folks, saying, my heart is right there with these people. So, of course, Fox News had to run with this all day, not to mention run with the fact that the Socialist Party of the U.S. has praised them and the Communist Party of the U.S. as well and Hugo Chavez and Iran. And this is just what Fox runs ad nauseum. I don't remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, and if there's anybody out there who has information, please let me know. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let me know if the occupation movement has solicited any of those requests. Maybe just one. I would love to see that. Also, Pat Robertson, also back in the news, and this guy just gets crazier and crazier as the days go by. He's saying that Obama is trying to incite a revolt. Now, I have been at a number of these Occupy sites. Obama is right up there on the list of frustrations. I'm not getting the shock troop. I'm not getting the Obama minions. I'm just not getting it. But Robertson seems to think that these people were put in there by Obama and paid for by Soros. Not the case. Not the case at all. What these folks are talking about is having the conversation of what kind of a society do we want to have. And I think Bernie Sanders summed it up pretty well on current TV. He said, I think what the president is catching on to is that the American people want him to stand up tall and straight on behalf of working families who are struggling desperately today and take on big moneyed interests who are so powerful and the wealthy people who are doing phenomenally well. He went on to say that, you know, look, a lot of people are sympathetic with the Occupy Wall Street movement because it's them. And we're seeing the Tea Party support falling. And Sanders says that tells you something. It's not only the greed and recklessness of Wall Street, the important issue that the demonstrators have been right about raising is the moral and economic aspect of grossly unequal distribution of wealth. And it's what I've been talking about for quite some time. It's about the jobs. It's about getting people back to work. It's about creating an environment where we can grow the economy. All of our problems go away if we can somehow fix our trade deficit, if we can somehow get the 14-15 million people off the unemployment rolls and back onto the employment rolls. And you do that how you have to. Lautenberg wants to see a WPA-type program. Great idea for the people who are long-term unemployed. Get them back earning a wage. Get them back on the job. As I've always said, there are therapeutic qualities to work. There's something special about the end of the day that you know you've accomplished something. For too many people, they've lost that, and we need to get back for them. But beyond that, you need people paying taxes back into the system. And as we grow this thing, all of our other problems seem to go away. You know, we had this whole debt talk, the hostage situation over the debt and the deficit. Nobody talked about our trade deficit. Nobody talked about the fact that we are buying more from overseas than we're selling. And that costs us jobs. It's pretty simple. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about jobs, jobs, jobs. You may remember last November, Republicans in their grand pledge said that they wanted jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, not so much. When we come back, Judy Schwenk, state senator from Berks County, back after this.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Ford UAW workers wrap up their voting on the tentative labor agreement today. On Monday, voting by Ford workers in support of the tentative UAW contract was 58% approval. UAW President Bob King is touting job creation in the contracts and a 20% raise for some new hires. Most UAW workers at Ford, GM, and Chrysler did not get wage increases, but will receive bonuses and profit sharing instead. For anybody wondering why the Occupy movement is protesting, Occupy DC organizer Kevin Zeese sums it up. In a blog, Zeese says this is why people are protesting. Because the people need to take power from the political and economic elites who have destroyed the economy and have us trapped in war quagmires around the world, Zeese writes. Because we need to end corporate rule that favors gluttonous profits for the wealthiest while the basic necessities of tens of millions are not met. Because we need to immediately end wars of the American empire that have literally killed and displaced millions of innocent people. Zeese concluded by saying, we occupy to create a more perfect union where participatory democracy replaces the rule of concentrated wealth. Some major retailers are closing stores just as the holiday shopping season gets into gear. Jesse Russell reports.
The second largest home improvement chain in the country is shuttering 20 stores and laying off nearly 2,000 employees. The Lowe's home improvement chain closed 10 of the stores earlier this month, with the remaining stores turning off the lights in November. The company has also dialed down the rate in which it opens new stores. Lowe's will open 10 or 15 new stores in 2012, as opposed to the previous average of 30 stores per year. Gap and Talbot's have also announced plans to close stores. The clothing retailers are suffering from anemic sales as they enter the 2011 holiday shopping season. Combined, they'll shutter more than 300 stores. Gap plans to close 200 out of their 900 shops. The clothing retailer is planning to change the way it does business. Instead of being a Gap brand specialty retailer, the store will now focus on affordability. The company has seen a 22% year-over-year decline in operating income.
Attack. What do we do?
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association and by the United Mine Workers of America. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Gasoline, groceries, and a haze is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there from the website. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take the program wherever you go. So everyone's got a jobs plan. The Democrats have a jobs plan. The Republicans have a jobs plan, each in the U.S. House and in the Senate. They've got their different bills. The president has two, possibly three, if you get into the new itsy-bitsy, bite-sized little bill count. Sadly, very few of them have any snowball's chance of passing. Now here on the state level, Pennsylvania, Democrats have a jobs plan. Nice name, Pennsylvania Works Now. I like it. Sounds like we may actually get something done. That's why I've asked Pennsylvania State Senator Judy Schwenk to come on talk to us a little bit about this jobs plan. Judy, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure. Hello, Rick. How are you?
I am great. Does this plan stand a chance?
I don't know, Rick. Certainly I think we have great ideas in here, and we welcome bipartisan support and discussion on the plans that we've put together. We know this is what we need in Pennsylvania, and I think my colleagues across the aisle know it too. We just need to start talking about it.
Well, what needs to happen is we need to start putting the economy first, stop going away with all of this divisive nonsense, these fringe issues, stop worrying about abortion, stop worrying about gay marriage, stop worrying about all of that, and focus on getting people back to work.
The number one concern.
So let's look at the Pennsylvania Works Now plan. Some pretty interesting incentives. One that you've proposed to encourage employer-subsidized daycare alternatives. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, as long time ago, having needed daycare as a single mom, Rick, myself, I know how costly it is and how it forces families to make difficult choices as to whether they can afford to work or not. So what we're talking about here is offering a 20% tax credit to small businesses, up to 50 employers, that would offer to subsidize daycare, not all of it. Just a certain part of it. And we think with the dollars allotted to this, you know, using a tax credit, capping it at about $5 million, we could help 5,000 families. And the interesting wrinkle to this is it's not just about child daycare. It's also about helping our elderly parents. Many of us have a older adult, a mom or dad at home with us, and they oftentimes need care during the day. And this makes it very difficult for people to work.
Yeah, I look at this and I go, you know, who could possibly be against it? Where are the family values people when you need them?
I just think this makes so much common sense. Just a little bit of a hand up.
Well, I mean, to me, this should have been part of the welfare reform bill back in the 90s. You wanted to push people off of welfare and into the workforce, help them by letting them have some security and knowing that their child's going to be taken care of. My plan was put people back to work watching other people's kids while they go off into the workforce. That never came to fruition, though.
That makes sense, though, too, because in many cases, child care workers are among the lowest paid. And they really have such a critically important job.
So let's talk about job training. There's a lot of talk in Washington about cutting and gutting the job training that's out there. How do we improve people's chances of getting jobs after they go through job training or they come out of school?
Well, you know, one of the things that we note is that many times kids in high school don't know, should they go to college, should they go to technical school? They really don't know the options that are out there. So the second piece of our legislative package creates an individual career plan for each student that they start to develop in high school. And they can then, as a result of that, decide what kind of training they'd like to have. It gives them the opportunity to participate in internships, you know, on-the-job training as well as technical school training or even, you know, college.
You know, and talking about the college angle, you know, I've met so many people with this occupation movement who, you know, they took out student loans, they did what they were told, they did what they were told. You know, you get a good education, that's your ticket to the middle class. I met a kid today, $118,000 in debt, because he went on, got his master's degree, living in his parents' basement, probably never going to get out because he can't find a decent job.
That's a real tragedy for this generation, Rick, is that there's so many of our recent college graduates, both undergrad and graduate, who can't launch their careers. This is a real serious concern.
And what's frustrating to me is I look at the governor's budget. Originally, he wanted to cut higher education in half, shifting more responsibility onto to these individual students, these kids coming out of high school. And it tells me that the party of family values, the party of education, and God and country, maybe not so much.
You know, it's almost as if we're offered an either-or situation. You either wait for the job creators and do nothing, or you're spending too much money to try to get jobs going in this country. Seems to me it's not an either-or proposition. We can do both. There is a role for government to play in getting things started.
You know, in talking about the job training and the idea of sitting down with kids when they're in high school to start maybe mapping out what they want to do in their lives, one of the things that you've proposed is a training program for the Marcellus Shale drilling operations.
Yeah, this is interesting. You know, if you go up in the areas or down, you know, when you talk of southwestern part of the state, you see an awful lot of out-of-state license plates, Oklahoma, Texas, and what we'd like to see happen, particularly in our technical colleges and technical schools, training so that our students can take some of the jobs in the Marcellus Shale industry.
Well, you know, at the end of this, you know, can't you do both? Can't you, you know, incentivize hiring Pennsylvanians? You know, it used to be, and you know, I'm not that old, that you would get on with one of these companies and they may actually train you a little bit, help you with the skills, maybe through your union, you know, apprenticeship programs that would be built for that. Is there any of that in this?
Absolutely, there is. I mean, that's what this is all about. But you know, specifically targeted to Marcellus Shale. I mean, that's, you know, obviously that's coming on. It's you know, the train has left the station on that. And there should be opportunities for Pennsylvanians there.
And it's and not just with the drilling in the Marcellus Shale,
also
other jobs in the green technology, getting people, you know, maybe trained to put solar panels on. You know, I'm a big proponent of solar. I'm a big proponent of wind and geothermal. But, you know, there's a shortage of people who can do it, and there's a shortage of people who are trained to do it.
That is the case, and there is a piece within this you know, this package, PA Works Now, Senate Bill 687, that would actually provide training both at technical schools, community colleges, colleges, labor organizations. In my town, Reading, the IBEW is training young workers to work in the solar industry. I've seen them in action. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's not all that different from what folks in the IBEW or the laborers or any of the other unions already do, the pipe fitters. It's just a little bit different of a specialty, maybe a class or two, a tweaking on top of their already extensive training.
Right, right. Another aspect of this, too, Rick, is that we've found that a program that creates a school-to-work transition can be very, very successful. For example, in some counties, the technical school is actually sending students to college and getting high school students. And they're getting college credits while they're still in high school so that when they do graduate, they've got a jump start on their career, you know, have already earned some credits at a much lower cost and able to get into the workforce much earlier.
Is there any money allocated to helping people get into community colleges, into college, to help defray some of the costs? I know the governor gutted a bunch of it. You know, I can't imagine, you know, being a high school kid looking at college today, knowing that I'm going to walk out with $25,000, $30,000 weight around my neck, even before I even have an opportunity to get a job. It's just nuts to me.
It's daunting. It really is. And of course, there are student loans and grants that are available. This particular program that I was talking about, the school-to-work transition, was funded by the state, but that was unfortunately cut back. I'm hopeful that next year's budget, we can, you know, show them that this was a program that worked, and see if we can't get it refunded.
You know, so I get these updates from these different job centers and these different institutes around the country. Who, you know, this segment of the population is unemployed at 10 or 20 or 30%. And in this economy right now, teenagers, you know, kids in their late teens, early 20s, they're the folks who are the highest rate of unemployed in the country, because really, honestly, and truthfully, they're competing with their parents for those jobs right now. And I see you have a youth summer program to help with that a little bit.
Right. They're, you know, using proceeds from the oil and gas well royalties. What we're proposing is something similar to the conservation corps program that was very successful in getting young people working in our state parks. We expanded that to a certain degree, and I think this is really unique and good in that we could also have high school students work in city parks and recreation commissions. So many of our boroughs and our cities, you know, are cutting, you know, so many services, and our parks aren't being taken care of. This is a great way to give young people skills and also help create more livable communities.
Well, you know why our parks aren't being taken care of, Senator Swank. They want to privatize it off, drive the value of it down so they can sell it off to the lowest bidder. And what's frustrating to me on so many levels is we've got a governor who just appointed a privatization committee, not to look at things if we should privatize, but to look at what we should be privatizing. Not a matter of if we're going to, it's just a matter of it, when we're going to.
It's difficult times. And, you know, when you look, Rick, at the numbers, we can all read unemployment numbers. We were just talking about teens in Pennsylvania. 17% of them are unemployed, you know, those who want to work. And the rate for college graduates, recent college graduates, has almost doubled in the past 4 years of unemployment. There's real people behind these numbers. And we need to do everything we can, you know, to help people get back into the employment role.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of college students who are struggling. In fact, there's a bunch of them sitting out on the Capitol steps right now saying, hey, take a look at us. Listen to our stories. And we got people all across the country and really across the globe saying the exact same thing.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, I'm under no illusion that everything that we proposed here is necessarily going to make it to the finish line. But we're talking about it, and we're going to keep talking about it, and I particularly will be, until we get somebody to listen and understand this is what people care about, jobs.
Yeah, what's kind of frustrating to me is November of 2010, the Republicans on the national scale said that they were about the jobs, jobs, jobs. In fact, I've got a pledge on my desk that they put out saying that, yet I have seen really nothing happen. I've seen nothing but roadblock and divisiveness, and that frustrates people. And you can see the anger in the streets today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Senator Swank, I appreciate your time. I'm hoping some of this stuff comes to fruition. So we get people back to work. We turn this economy around and turn our state around, and I'm hoping that you'll be there to help lead that.
Well, I appreciate that, Rick. Keep following it, and we really appreciate your support.
Thanks so much. Judy Schwank, State Senator from Berks County. Going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
And just like that, she was gone. Sarah Palin, the phantasmagoric shooting star of far right-wing wackiness, has formally bowed out of the 2012 presidential race. Apparently, her decision was God-sent. We can assume this because in her 2008 vice presidential run, Palin explained her decision-making process to us on a Fox TV show. I'm like, okay, God, if there is an open door for me somewhere, this is what I always pray. I'm like, don't let me miss the open door. Show me where the open door is, even if it's just cracked up a little bit. Maybe I'll plow right on through that. Maybe prematurely plow through it, but don't let me miss an open door. Eons from now, archaeologists will unearth this truly awesome and breathless sentence and say, huh? But for us political observers today, that burst of Palinese simply translates to this: God showed Sarah the door. In breaking the news of her departure from the political stage, the Fox-made millionaire trotted out her family again, declaring that she decided not to run out of respect for them. Uh-huh. And out of respect for polls showing that only 21% of Americans have a favorable opinion of her. Also, get this, 3/4 of the Republican primary voters said they did not want her in the race. But let's give her credit. Yes, she's shown herself to be an incoherent, frighteningly unqualified, and far-out political figure. But without her, the door would not have opened for Michelle Bachmann, Rick Perry, and other incoherent, frighteningly unqualified, and far-out Republican contenders. This is Jim Hajar saying, Palin would probably give credit to God for opening the door for Bachmann, Perry, and company, but I don't think God hates America that much. So take a bow, Sarah. You earned this one. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Minimum wage!
You know what it means when they pay you minimum wage? You know what they're trying to tell you is like, hey, if I could pay you less, I would.
Yeah, well, they're not doing that at Goldman Sachs, I'll tell you that. The CEO class, they're doing quite well. Thank you very much, even though the Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated lost $428 million. But don't feel bad for them. They have had a great year. Profits up for them. In fact, you know, they did lose 84 cents a share in the third quarter, but, you know, earlier in the year, they were up almost $3 a share. So a little drop down, not going to kill them. In fact, hasn't hurt the CEO pay much at all. Analysts had expected, on average, to lose about 16 cents a share, according to Reuters, but they lost about 84. So poor Goldman. If I had harp music, I would play that and some violins, and we would feel oh so sorry for them. I don't see us evicting them anytime soon. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, comments, questions, something on your mind. You know, you look at this whole occupation movement, and the reality is you can see the anger, the common thread is the anger, be it the wars, be it unemployment, be it the Wall Street bailouts, be it any number of things. People are in the streets for a very good reason. And, you know, the frame is still, well, we don't know why they're there and they don't have a real good idea yet. Or, you know, they're terrorists or trying to systematically destroy the nation. It's amazing to me. And what we're seeing all across this country are people arresting, cities arresting the people out in the streets. And I just can't get the Seattle thing out of my mind. The fact that sitting down in a public park and opening an umbrella is a crime. I'm struggling with that. I'm struggling with the fact that you have a constitutional right to petition your government for redress. And they arrest you and pepper spray you for doing that. It's just amazing. I got an email earlier today from someone. If you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. 10-point plan this guy sent me. 10 points of contention. One, he says the Wall Street caused the economic crisis. I don't know that anyone can debate that. Because he says, you know, can anyone debate these points? Wall Street crashed the economy. Any debate? Any argument? No. The economic crisis caused the unemployment crisis. Anybody gonna debate with that? Anything? Once? Twice? Going? No. The economic crisis, he writes, the unemployment crisis caused by the economic crisis caused by the Wall Street criminals has worsened the housing bubble. And that burst because of greedy banksters, real estate agents, appraisers, mortgage underwriters, and consumers who inflated the mortgage industry. Those who lost their jobs also lost their homes. No job, no home. Any argument there? I can't find one. Wall Street profited from the bailouts. Well, certainly not an argument there. He says the super rich got super rich super fast. The rest of us? Not so much. I can't argue with that. He said, add that to the uber wealthy paying lower taxes and even lower taxes yet. And the rest of us? Can you argue with that? I can't. Number seven, he says, how many of the crowd that crashed the economy are in jail? He has zero. I guess you could make the argument that right now there are three. There's the Ponzi guy, there's Raj, and the guy I can't remember his name. So maybe three. Number eight, he says, Wall Street is simply too big. Regulations are a joke. And I can't argue really with that too much because we have put so much of our faith into Wall Street. We've put our entire retirement belief into them, all those crummy 401ks. He writes, Wall Street owns the regulators, the courts, Congress, the White House, and us along with it. Don't know that I can argue with that. And he says, number 10, this is not Norman Rockwell's America or our parents' America. And the Republican Party, well, not the Republican Party anymore. And again, I don't know that I can argue with him on any of the points. But, you know, you stop and you think about how all this stuff transpired and what we're being told. Ad nauseum, it's those greedy union workers. It's those public sector workers. It's those public servants. It's their fault. It's not the fact that you had an investor class drunk with power, absolute power. I mean, imagine having the ability to transfer billions and billions of dollars at the push of a button, having the kind of power to control people's lives by having all of their assets. Now, I was looking at some numbers today, and it's remarkable to me that the top 1% of people in this country, the top 1%, control 95% of the financial assets. That's, you know, people, that's not their homes, it's not their retirement, it's all the other stuff, the investments, the financial aspects other than retirement. 95% owned by the top 1%. That to me is just remarkable that we have seen this mass consolidation of wealth. And I was on a radio program this morning talking about the occupation and talking about, you know, some of this stuff. And, you know, someone called in and talked about natural law. Well, you know, and I didn't get to answer the question. I wish I would have had the opportunity to do it, but I didn't. And I wish I would have. And I think I know who the caller was. But it's one of those things where they throw something out and hope you don't answer it. And it really wasn't answered. Well, what about my personal right to earn my wages and, you know, the natural law? Well, what we're seeing right in front of us is natural law at work. The big fish eats the little fish. Wall Street is growing more powerful by the day, controlling more assets, more wealth, and everybody at the bottom, not so much. This argument that I can make my own deal is a great argument in theory. Yes, I can make my own deal because I am my own man. But you know what? Should you have the right to make your own dumb deal if it's going to tear me down with you? You know, your right to be stupid ends at when it affects me. And this whole idea, have you noticed the warehouse jobs in this country paying about $8 or $9 an hour? Where's the natural law in that? Oh, yeah, there is a natural law. Those people need to eat, they need to have a job, and they take those crummy jobs because that's all that's there. And what the natural law people would love to see is you do away with all the social safety nets that have propped that $8 an hour warehouse job up to $8. They want to take away minimum wage. They want to take away the overtime laws. They want to take away unemployment. They want to take all that stuff away so that $8 an hour warehouse job is now a $4 an hour warehouse job, or maybe a $2 an hour warehouse job. And that $2 or $6 wage difference goes to the very top. More wealth redistribution. That's what a shill for a right-wing group like the Tinky Tank would say. And, you know, you expect that from someone who makes disingenuous arguments on a regular basis. But I'm telling you, the right, they're masterful at these arguments. They're masterful at oh, you know, you have the, you're the, this grand individual. You can make your own deal. How's it working out? How's the economy working for the majority of people? And you look around. Even the people in the quote-unquote 53% who are posting signs, they're struggling. They're having a tough time making ends meet. And now they, you know, like me, I like to think, you know, I'm working my behind off. I'm supporting my family. I'm doing okay. I'm making it to next week, the week after. We're surviving. But is that the kind of society we want? Where people are just surviving, where you're just existing. That's what this discussion is about. Do we want to have a society of, hey, I just existed today? Or do we want to have a society where we say we all benefit from the hard work and the prosperity that this nation enjoys? Look, there should be nobody homeless in this country. There should be nobody hungry in this country. There should be nobody unemployed or underemployed. There should be employment bountiful. But what we have done is we've convinced ourselves that, oh, we need to cut budgets by kicking teachers out into the streets. We need to cut budgets by kicking firemen. And, hey, let's privatize it. In fact, let's use prisoners. Let's use those prisoners to go fight our fires. It's just plain nuts.
And again, Rick, if we don't... We talked about it on this show numerous times, and, you know, we're throwing out the warnings, but unless we change the system, we're going in a direction we don't want to go. The momentum is there. The rich and the powerful have controls, but I would warn them, you know, if you have any sense of enlightened self-interest, I would look around and envision the country that you're taking us to. Is that really what you want? I don't think so. If we can't argue on a moral plane, maybe we can argue, you know, Rich, you know, you people that have the money long term, you want to survive, you want to keep being rich, maybe you better look at the direction of the country, because it does affect you whether you like it or not.
So on Friday, Eric Cantor is going to give his big jobs, his big prosperity speech. Going to focus on single moms and the small business owner. Can't wait to hear that. Cannot wait to hear his rationale. Because according to Rick Santorum, it's all those single mothers who are the base of the Democratic Party. Which I'm going, man, tricky Ricky, buddy. You really need to find a new shtick. Let the Koch brothers find you a job and get you out of the frame. Because it's just getting crazier and crazier the more you listen to the guy. And he may be intelligent, but he's desperate. And desperation makes you do dumb things, maybe. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's an intelligent guy. I don't know. But some of the things he says are really pretty stupid. But again, you know what he's focusing on? The divisive stuff. He's focusing on the stuff to tear us apart. What I'm hoping comes of this occupation movement, what I really am hoping, is that there's an opportunity to reach the mild teabaggers. You know, just the people who were on the fringe. The people who were like me at the very beginning of it, who said, yeah, I'm with you. I'm angry. I am. I'm frustrated. Things are not going as they should. This is not my grandparents' America. This is not my parents' generation America. This is something different. We have created a wealth class beyond the recognition of the last 70, 80 years. Something needs to be done. We need another great compression. We need something that's going to say, you know what, sorry you at the very top, you have gotten too big for your britches. When you have a handful of people who have the ability to sway our entire nation, you've got a real problem. So the Democrats, evidently, and Fox News is doing a great job doing this, I have yet to see it. And I would love to hear anyone in the occupation nation who will come on and say, yes, the Democrats came down and begged for our endorsement. You're not going to find anyone. But I would love to hear that. If a Democrat came down and said, please support me, I'd love to hear it. Because fake news on Fox keeps saying, well, you know, the Democrats, you know, they're endorsing this. And, you know, we're going to make sure that we keep saying this so the Wall Street people don't give them any money. Because if they don't give the Democrats the money, they'll give it to Republicans. And everybody knows this game is played on the money field. The more money the Republicans can rake in, the better chance they got to buy more advertising, and the better chance they've got to take this next election. And the worse off we're all going to be. So for me, I mean, the first thing we've got to do is take money out of the equation. It's a pretty simple premise. And I don't know anybody who you talk to them one-to-one. And I would love to hear your thoughts on this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you can make a justification for unlimited funding going to candidates, unlimited funding into the political arena, because, look, the only people that benefit from that
are the people who have huge amounts, huge, huge amounts of disposable income. I don't know about you, but I do all right for myself. And I don't have that much money to hand off to a politician. The Koch brothers, the Scaifes, the Waltons, lots of money. Take a quick break back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Are when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got a question, comment, something on your mind, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So my favorite sign of the day comes from a woman at the Occupy Rally. It says, quote, "Hey, Congress, the jobs are not in my uterus." Kind of like that sign. Kind of right to the point. Get off the abortion kick, leave her uterus alone, and start creating jobs. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Remember the pledge? 48 pages, 27 pages of really nice pictures. Kind of a very Bushian type book. Lots of pictures, lots of smiling people. Lots of flowery language, a lot of repetition. So it's the same words over and over again that you can, you recognize those from the page before. It's basically says the same thing. Very, very Bushian type piece of literature, if you will. But here again, didn't follow through on it. Their jobs plan only came, what? Year and a half late? And it's the same stuff that got us into this mess. So the idea is, and help me here, because I'm trying to figure this out. I'm not the brightest bulb in the box when it comes to the economy, evidently, because I don't know how pulling a whole bunch of money out of the economy helps to grow the economy. I don't know how cutting some 535,000 jobs in state and local government since 2008 is going to help create jobs. I'm sorry, I'm just not. Maybe there's an explanation. Maybe I just don't know what it is. But we have lost, I guess not lost, they have chopped off 535,000 jobs since the Bush collapse. That's over a half a million people out in the street in the local government industry. You look at the federal level, lots of job losses there. This is the biggest cut in public employment since 1980, since Reagan went in and chopped and used the axe. Again, there's kind of something there. You gotta, whenever Republicans seem to get their way, it's always about kicking people to the curb, more unemployment. The National League of Cities, they're saying that, well, there's no end in sight. They're claiming that we could lose 265,000 more jobs by the end of 2012, especially if Republicans get their way. And you look at cities across the country. I mean, Rahm Emanuel in Chicago, his first budget, 517 layoffs. They eliminated 2,000 positions to close their budget gap. And what's interesting about this is you lay all these people off, and you put them on the backs of the unemployment rolls, which you end up paying out of your pocket. So it's a negative. And you go across the country, Nassau County in New York, they laid off some 700 workers. They're going to leave 300 just unfilled, I guess. And you go city after city across the country, and it's the same story over and over again. And they think that somehow this is going to be able to fix the economy. So even if the private sector does create jobs, which they have been very slowly, you can't keep up with the job losses in the public sector, which means your unemployment rate keeps climbing. Which is why I got to be honest, I think part of this, the answer to this is helping the states. Just a thought. And maybe the states helping themselves. Got an email from Andy. He writes, Rick, good article today in the Financial Times titled State Budget Dilemma as Surcharge on Wealthy Expires. It shows that New Yorkers want to keep the upper bracket surcharge. 61% are in favor of it. Only 38% oppose. The state tax adds 1% to those making over $200,000 and 2.1% to those making over $500,000. But as you said last night, Governor Cuomo says he opposes renewal. The tax brought the state a sorely needed $4.6 billion a year, $13.8 billion over the last 3 years. And he had some very not nice words that I'm not allowed to say over the airwaves of terrestrial radio about the Democrats, especially Andrew Cuomo. But you look at this, and again, what's frustrating is you can't even get Democrats. And this is why, you know, the whole frame by the Fox News and the Pat Robertsons and all of these right-wingers who are trying to say the occupation thing was set up by Democrats. It was set up by Obama in the secret room. And it's funded by Soros. Nonsense. But, you know, it makes for a nice story, doesn't it? It gets the people who've got, you know, their panties all up in a wedge, all even further wedged up. The reality is Democrats are just as badly in the pocket of Wall Street as Republicans are now because of our election laws, because of the fact they're stuck eating from the same bowl. If they can't get big money out of Wall Street, if they can't get big money out of the financiers, they can't get big money from the hedge fund managers and the traders, they're at a political disadvantage. Our problems could be solved very easily by getting money out of the system. Now, I know, Rick, you're being naive. You'll never get money out of the system. You're right. You're never going to get money out of the system. But you know what you can do? You can put spending caps on. You can put transparency measures in place so you know who's running these hate ads. You know who's funding what. And it's right out there. Look, you know, it may be a big steaming pile, but I want to be able to smell the big steaming pile. I want to know who dumped the big steaming pile. We should be able to point to that, don't you think?
And you would think that the Republicans who, you know, here in this state talk about transparency and accountability and open government, yet they have done everything in their power to be everything but open and transparent. You would think, you know, the Tea Party people who are, you know, all about accountability and open government, you think that they would be pushing as well. There's a lot of things naturally that pull people together. And I would like to unite people. I'd like to say there are a lot of common things. This money in politics should be one of those common things. Having a tax code that rewards work should be a common theme. Making sure that people can make a living at their job, a common theme. You would hope.
The Citizens United case, Rick, I mean, there was an effort. There was an effort earlier in the year, and what's disappointing is very little support from the Tea Party crowd. Now, there's an issue that you would think they would jump all over. Money buying the system, and you're right, I was a little bit like you. I thought these are the kind of issues that when they initially started out, I thought they were kind of like a populist uprising that was just tired of government and money, excessive money in government. Not so. They've proven to be in some ways even worse than the conservative Republicans. And that's very, very disappointing because I think the Tea Party could have very much been a positive for this nation, but they turned out to be a big, big disappointment.
Yeah. Well, it's all about me. It's all about what can I stick in my pocket. And speaking of all about me, and, you know, there's part of me that goes, you know, someday I'd like to be really rich, and I'd like to travel the country in a luxury limousine camper. There's a company, this Element Palazzo, $3 million luxury camper.
Ooh.
40-foot mobile mansion, they're saying, and has its own master bedroom with adjoining bathroom. It has a whole leather interior, a rainfall shower, a fireplace, 40-inch TVs all over the place, skylights, you name it, this thing has got it. And it is a mobile palace. It reaches speeds of 93 miles an hour. And uses 20% less fuel than other vehicles. In fact, it looks like, when I was looking at it, it looks like there was a hot tub on the very top. So you have your own mobile palace. And I looked at this and I'm going, $3 million to drive on Pennsylvania's roads? $3 million to drive over some of these bridges? Are you kidding me?
I've seen what they look like at $250,000. I can't imagine one costing $3
million. $3
million. Wow.
Wouldn't it be nice to have that kind of money just to, well, I don't know, throw away?
Can we talk decadence? I think so.
And, you know, you look at this thing and you go, you know, these are not people that live in my neighborhood. These are not people who go to the local bar or the local watering hole for a beer after work. These are the people who do not get their hands dirty.
There was amazing, a time many moons ago stuff. I looked at one, and the first thing I looked at was a fireplace.
There you go. Yeah. Need the fireplace. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Laura Clausen from Daily Kos's labor page about the labor issues of the day. Back after this. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Four UAW workers wrap up their voting on the tentative labor agreement today. On Monday, voting by Ford workers in support of the tentative UAW contract was 58% approval. UAW President Bob King is touting job creation in the contracts and a 20% raise for some new hires. Most UAW workers at Ford, GM, and Chrysler did not get wage increases, but will receive bonuses and profit sharing instead. For anybody wondering why the Occupy movement is protesting, Occupy DC organizer Kevin Zeese sums it up. In a blog, Zeese says this is why people are protesting. Because the people need to take power from the political and economic elites who have destroyed the economy and have us trapped in war quagmires around the world, Zeese writes. Because we need to end corporate rule that favors gluttonous profits for the wealthiest while the basic necessities of tens of millions are not met. Because we need to immediately end wars of the American Empire that have literally killed and displaced millions of innocent people. Zeese concluded by saying, we occupy to create a more perfect union where participatory democracy replaces the rule of concentrated wealth. Some major retailers are closing stores just as the holiday shopping season gets into gear. Jesse Russell reports.
The second largest home improvement chain in the country is shuttering 20 stores and laying off nearly 2,000 employees. The Lowe's home improvement chain closed 10 of the stores earlier this month, with the remaining stores turning off the lights in November. The company has also dialed down the rate in which it opens new stores. Lowe's will open 10 or 15 new stores in 2012, as opposed to the previous average of 30 stores per year. Gap and Talbot's have also announced plans to close stores. The clothing retailers are suffering from anemic sales as they enter the 2011 holiday shopping season. Combined, they'll shutter more than 300 stores. Gap plans to close 200 out of their 900 shops. The clothing retailer is planning to change the way it does business. Instead of being a Gap brand specialty retailer, the store will now focus on affordability. The company has seen a 22% year-over-year decline in operating income.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association and by the United Mine Workers of America. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I will oppose the Columbia Free Trade Agreement. I want Congress to pass a set of trade deals. Send a message to Congress to come to an agreement on trade deals.
They're selling make-believe, and we don't buy that here. 'Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down. While the boss man takes his bonus pay and jets on out of town. D.C.'s bailing out the bankers as a farmer.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So, yeah, gonna vote against that trade agreement. Yeah, that's gonna happen. Evidently, on Friday, he's gonna sign it. Pass through Congress. You know, they talk about this divided government. They talk about, you know, too partisan to get anything done. Yet, boy, that South Korean free trade agreement brought 83 U.S. senators together. Pretty amazing. And how are you and I gonna do on that? I'm betting not very well. Anyway, here to talk to us about what's going on in the wonderful world of labor, our good friend Laura Clausen, dailyclose.com. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Laura, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm looking at the subway story in New York City. There's actually some austerity nut running around preaching how wonderful it would be if we asked not what billionaires could do for their country, but we can do for them.
I think that's a fair question, and I'm pretty sure everyone on Wall Street does, too.
You know, I remember back years ago when I think I was probably just out of high school, there was a Rolling Stone push to try and get Paul McCartney over the billion-dollar mark, making him one of the first entertainers and one of the first people to be over $1 billion. And I thought it was pretty amazing back then, and now we've got, I guess, some 1,500 official billionaires.
I think going into hedge funds is the way to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you look at this and you go, is this good for our democracy? Is it good to have this many billionaires?
I'm going to go with no.
See, I don't think so either.
It's not good to have, you either have to have everybody or not that many.
Socialist! Commie, fascist! Ist! Something-ist!
stuff,
yeah,
you know.
I know. So, but, you know, you listen to what's going on fake news on Fox, and they're trying to say this occupation stuff is, well, this is the doing of Obama's stormtroopers, and George Soros is behind it. And, you know, if George Soros funded everything that the right claims he funds, he'd be standing out there in the protest going, hey, can you give me a job? I need the job. I need some money. I'm broke.
I know. It was amazing that the right got Reuters to bite on that. Is Soros funding the protests? Because Soros once gave money to a foundation that gave money to Adbusters, which sort of started Occupy Wall Street, only sort of.
Only, you know, really, you know, the sixth degree of separation.
Right.
And the whole Tides Foundation, the connection. You know, any reasonable journalist with even the poorest of work ethic should have known that that was bogus.
It was amazing that they bit on that and that they actually went with that story.
Well, welcome to
so flimsy.
Welcome to America Media. The big story, I guess, John Micah in his home district touting how wonderful the FAA funding's doing for his district. Wasn't he the guy who was like the head of shutting it down?
Yeah, he's the head of the House Transportation Committee. He's the guy who explicitly said over the summer, yes, I am trying to take money from rural airports in the states of powerful Democratic senators in order to put pressure on them to take union rights from airline workers. And over that, he shut the FAA down, and now he's got a press release like, oh, there's millions of dollars coming into the district through the FAA. Aren't I great getting you this pork?
You know, I look at this story, and I look at this guy, and how blatant and how brazen he has been over taking workers' rights away. And even if you're not a union employee, just the fact that you may have the right at some point, if you so choose, is something I think you want to keep, no?
Well, I mean, regardless of how you feel about unions, do you want a politician taking away your right to vote in the same kind of election that elected him, you know, by the standards that John Micah is trying to apply to airline workers in union representation elections, he would not have been elected to Congress. Nobody in Congress right now would have been elected to Congress. So it's not just anti-union, it's anti-democratic.
Yeah, but I don't know that he's all that in favor of elections anyway. I mean, you look at all this stuff that's going on with the voter suppression, with these dumb ID bills and all of the gamesmanship that they're trying. You got to wonder if they're all that committed to that whole secret ballot thing that they were so concerned about.
Yeah, no, it's funny how the standards change. Although I guess, you know, you can have a secret ballot if you can wait in line for however many hours, have exactly the ID that they want, you know, not be a student, not be retired, be white. If you meet all of those qualifications, then you can have a secret ballot, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe we'll give you one of those provisional ones.
Right.
Jeez. Speaking of collective bargaining rights, brings me to Ohio. The Issue 2 fight is going on. And what is Liz Cheney doing in Ohio? Can she even find it on a map?
You know, she might have been there once for a fundraiser or something. But what Liz Cheney is doing is two things. She's trying to take the rights away from workers, away from public workers specifically. She's, you know, sending out a whole lot of mailers lying about what Issue 2 would do in the state. But she's also partly just positioning herself as someone who might be running for office or might be some kind of conservative kingmaker in the future. You know, like, it's not enough that we had Dick Cheney for however many years. Now we're going to have his daughter kind of taking on the mantle.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I'm not comfortable. You know, look, I want politicians. I want people who are going to be quote-unquote kingmakers. They should actually have a clue in their head. I don't want the daughter of somebody who was once something. Because I have this thought, you know, in like with Cheney's daughter, I think that, you know, she's probably not the swiftest, you know, bulb in the box or whatever. I'm worried about this. I worry
yeah.
about people like her having a say where she doesn't even belong. And all the money that flows into, she's, again, one of these, I love these euphemistic groups, Alliance for America's Future.
Right.
What the heck is
that? And secret money, you know, not disclosing who the donors are, just pouring money in from out of state, and you have no idea where this money is coming from.
You know what scares me is, you know, I went back home to Cleveland recently, and you see in where I grew up, in my high school years, not in my pre-high school years. Before high school, I lived in basically a war zone, so they weren't political at all. But in high school, it was a very solidly middle-class, working-class neighborhood. And you saw neighbors who had, you know, they had their dueling pro and against signs out. And you know that even if the Republicans lose this, and they probably will, they have caused major rifts in communities, I think, for generations over this battle over should workers have rights or not.
Right, and they've told so many lies about workers in the state, you know, that, oh, Ohio state workers are so overpaid, except that it turns out that if you compare state workers to people who have the same qualifications they have in the private sector, they're underpaid. So it's just this demonization and trying to drive people apart.
Yeah, there you go with your book learning. You sure are a smarty one there. That's just nuts. I saw an interesting story. The here in the area, Hershey Chocolate just down the road. We were at the when the kids walked out. We were part of a lot of the goings on. I understand. Finally, possibly, State Department going to do something. Maybe
They're investigating. You know, they're taking their time. But I think the New York Times had a big story on that, and I think that the more attention that gets, the more seriously the State Department is going to have to take it. But it's so galling that you think about this is a program that was designed to bring people to the United States who were interested in our culture and wanted to find out more, wanted to experience what America was like, and now it's, you know, we're bringing them here and abusing them.
But Laura, I would say they learned exactly what America is like.
Yes, they did, unfortunately.
They got an education of a lifetime. This is the life of an American working class young man, young woman. Right. This is it. And, you know, maybe they're going to go back and tell their friends, oh, you don't want to go there. That's a killer.
Well, I'll say the one thing that an American working class person has over them is that an American person gets to decide where they live, whereas these kids were getting put into, you know, five people Point. Into a one-bedroom apartment that they were being charged five times the market rate for.
And told if they complain, we're going to ship you back, and you'll
Right.
lose the thousands of dollars you put up. Some people said three, some people said four or five, upwards of $6,000 they paid for this once-in-a-lifetime experience, this once-in-a-lifetime thrill of packing boxes in a warehouse.
Right, exactly, because they can't get that experience at home.
Yeah, well, maybe they don't have boxes where they live. So
I'm sure they'd be happy to hear that.
are jobs coming back to the U.S., though? I saw you had a story about the call centers in India. They may be leaving India. Have conditions here in the U.S. gotten sufficiently low enough that those jobs may come back?
The call center jobs are going to the Philippines and so on, but, you know, this is a trend. We see that BMW and IKEA and all these other companies are coming to the U.S. for the cheap labor.
So no call center jobs back yet. So
not mostly, no.
I got to hear some guy who I know, you know, doesn't speak English going, hello, my name is Bob.
Right.
All
right. Right. Well,
okay.
You know, they're saying that the Philippines is good because they drive on the same side of the road we do. So they have more in common with us.
At least they have that. And lastly, the Occupy Wall Street Spurs support for unions among the working class?
Yeah, you know, so I used to work for Working America, which is the AFL-CIO's community organizing affiliate, and so I was really interested to see a story come out that they've had enormous success recruiting new members based on enthusiasm for Occupy Wall Street, that for all that, you know, Wall Street Journal op-eds and so on are trying to tell us that working class people have nothing in common with Occupy Wall Street. In fact, it's getting a lot of sympathy among kind of, you know, working class, lower middle class moderates in the Midwest.
So what you're telling me is working class people are looking at the folks out on Wall Street not as the dirty hippies having sex, but as actually people who may be like them?
Yeah, or, you know, if people who share their values, who share their concern and their anger at what's going on Wall Street and in our politics.
Yeah, I keep hearing the right-wing frame that it's just a bunch of dirty hippies having sex and doing drugs. And, I keep thinking that there's got to be some young, enterprising, triple X-rated filmmaker out there, you know, with his camera, because there are thousands of cameras all over the place. There's got to be somebody out there who is, who's filming all of this fornicating going on, because according to the right, it's everywhere.
Right. Well, you know, if Mayor Bloomberg has his way and takes the tents out of the Occupy Wall Street encampment, then I guess it'll just be right there on the street, supposedly.
Yeah, well, there you go. Anyway, Laura Clausen, Daily Kos labor page, dailykos.com, the website. We got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Always great to talk with you. You guys do fantastic work over there at the labor page at dailykos.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
All right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
And just like that, she was gone. Sarah Palin, the phantasmagoric shooting star of far right-wing wackiness, has formally bowed out of the 2012 presidential race. Apparently, her decision was God-sent. We can assume this because in her 2008 vice presidential run, Palin explained her decision-making process to us on a Fox TV show. I'm like, okay, God, if there's an open door for me somewhere, this is what I always pray, I'm like, don't let me miss the open door. Show me where the open door is, even if it's just cracked up a little bit. Maybe I'll plow right on through that, maybe prematurely plow through it, but don't let me miss an open door. Eons from now, archaeologists will unearth this truly awesome and breathless sentence and say, huh? But for us political observers today, that burst of Palinese simply translates to this. God showed Sarah the door. In breaking the news of her departure from the political stage, the Fox-made millionaire trotted out her family again, declaring that she decided not to run out of respect for them. Uh-huh. And out of respect for polls showing that only 21% of Americans have a favorable opinion of her. Also, get this. 3/4 of the Republican primary voters said they did not want her in the race. But let's give her credit. Yes, she's shown herself to be an incoherent, frighteningly unqualified, and far-out political figure. But without her, the door would not have opened for Michelle Bachmann, Rick Perry, and other incoherent, frighteningly unqualified, and far-out Republican contenders. This is Jim Hightower saying, Palin would probably give credit to God for opening the door for Bachmann, Perry, and company, but I don't think God hates America that much. So take a bow, Sarah. You earned this one.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So I don't know if you saw this story. This Bucks County School, it's in the Pennsbury School District. They've had some pretty big budget cuts. And thanks to our governor, virtually every school in the state has seen a pretty hefty cut in their budgets, which means they've had to make some serious decisions. Increase class sizes, cut teachers, cut the number of programs they offer, start charging kids for extracurriculars, all of the things that we've heard, all of the things that we've seen going on. Well, this particular school district, they've decided, well, you know what? our budget's been cut through by $3 million this year. We've dipped into our savings, for about $3 million. We need some more money. What are we going to do? Well, a couple of weeks ago, the district decided that they were going to allow corporate America to come in and put advertisements in their 16 public schools. Overall, there will be 218 ads running district-wide. Is that something we need to be talking about? It's going to raise $425,000 a year, they claim, these 218 ads running ad nauseum all day long. And, you know, it's odd because last night I had talked a little bit about the story that my wife left me, you know, saying, you know, do you think this is a good idea? I know in New Jersey they're plastering the buses with advertising. Eventually, it'll be like the gas stations where they got the little TV screens that run ads all the time. A little bit of news, but mostly ads. That's what we'll see in the buses, too. There'll be little screens everywhere. You know, I'm not comfortable with my child being advertised to 24/7. You know, at home, we don't turn the television set on. Why? Because the kids are drawn to the ads. My kids would rather sit and watch the ads than the programs. Why? Because they're very short. The attention span stuff plays to where kids' minds function. Real quick movement, real quick content, and it's over, on to the next thing. And advertisers understand this. And now they're getting their foot in the door. Now, according to the school district, they say, well, the ads must relate to health, education, nutrition, or student safety. And they may not endorse a product directly. Yet, according to this story, products like Post-it notes are advertised on these things. Is that educational? Is that... I don't know. And I start thinking back to my freshman year of college, when I lived in the dorm. And on the desk of every freshman was a care package. And in that care package were things that you would need. Shaving cream, a specific type of razor, a specific type aftershave, you know, all kinds of toiletries and all kinds of little samples of things. Why do they do this? Well, they want you to be brand specific. And I was thinking about this last night, and the one product that I still use to this day, some 25 years later, is the shaving gel that they put in the box. It was just a little can, three or four squirt cans. I still use that to this day. So for that company, that little freebie sample that they wrote off on their taxes anyway, made them a lifelong customer. What happens when you put this into the minds of 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds? What are you doing to the minds of our children? And I know people are saying, well, you know, they're going to have to toughen up. They're going to have to get used to it because they're going to be advertised to their whole life. They're at an age where they don't understand yet. Why can't we have a safe space for kids to actually, learn to read and write, do arithmetic, critically think without being inundated with every corporate control message that they can come up with? And it turns out that the company who's doing this is doing it around the country. The right wing has done such a masterful job of starving education. They have done such a masterful job of starving the beast and pulling funding away that these school districts now are stuck where, okay, either we're going to have 50 kids in a class, 60 kids in a class, or we're not going to be able to have, gym today or football or any sports, or we're going to have to sell our souls to the devils to make ends meet. Because, you know, I was reading the article and they're like, well, we don't want to raise taxes. And I'm going, you know, why do we have to ask corporate America, oh, please, will you come ruin the minds of our children? Will you come and advertise to our children 24/7? You know what they should probably do? It's like our video stream, which I hate, by the way, because as I understand, they throw commercials right in the middle of it. In fact, right now it could be a commercial on our video stream. Why don't they do that with education, too? What the heck? Because we're moving to this whole cyber-type education. Little Johnny now, 3 plus 3 is, and this ad brought to you by the good people at blah, 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 blah. And the kid goes, well, what was the answer? Well, you got the ad. Be happy with that. It's insane. It's insane what we're doing to this country. It's insane what we're doing to the infrastructure of our education. I mean, forget everything else, transportation, healthcare. I mean, education should be something that I think we all could probably, maybe, hopefully, please agree on. That kids need a good start. They need a safe space where they can learn. This, to me, is just plain nuts. Doesn't get any simpler than that. Just nuts. Why don't we say, instead of going, oh, would you please advertise? Oh, by the way, we're going to tax you, and we're going to hold you accountable. Because after all, education in this country has turned not into churning out critical thinkers, not churning out people who solve problems, but churning out little worker bees. Just little cogs in the wheel who are used for the business minions to make their products. I mean, you know, we just talked to Judy Schwank a minute ago, and there's a part of their jobs bill. To focus kids on, what are you going to do with your life? What direction do you want? What kind of job do you want in high school? At what point do we start saying, hey, in kindergarten, what do you want to be when you grow up? Okay, that's the path you're on. You're going to be on the, on the janitor path right from kindergarten. It's insane. And I don't see the outrage. What do you think? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, you look at this, Jake, and it's just, you know, I remember near the end where they brought the soda machine in. I think it was my senior year. And it was, oh, we have a Pepsi machine. Oh, and everybody would run, and the machine was out by the end of the day. And now you've got every fast food joint sponsoring reading hour. You got every fast food joint sponsoring math hour. You got every pizza joint, fast food restaurant. Oh, did you read a book today? Here's a coupon. Tell mom and dad to come bring you down.
Well, you talked about this Pennsboro school district, and the problem is
Pennsbury.
Pennsbury, yeah, okay. I have a pretty good idea where it is. The problem is that there's so many people, just like across the state, so many people, so many taxpayers that are hurting. They see their taxes going up. They see the state not reimbursing their school district at the same rate. And they say, well, you know, what alternative do we have? Unfortunately, when they look at it, that equation, what they're saying on the one hand is, Are we willing to maybe compromise the future of our children for a couple bucks? And some people are saying, look, I'm that strapped that, yeah, I do want to do that. Now, I'm sure they don't say, well, I'm going to hurt the children. But in essence, they are.
No, they're not my kids. I don't have any kids in school. Heck with them.
It all comes down to a bad economic condition in the right wing. You're exactly right. It's done a masterful job.
Tax them. It's that simple. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Patrick Kelly, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 952 out of California. This cross-border trucking thing just got me nuts. Back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefits Solutions can help you get the security you need.
Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated, professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm on a Mexican radio. And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast there. Or if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and you can take your class war on the go. So I'm sure you've seen it. Friday will be the big day. President Obama is going to be signing the South Korea, the Panama, and the Colombian job-killing free trade agreement. So congratulations. He said he wasn't going to. Then, well, I don't know. So Friday's the day. That's, geez, oh, man, another one of those things. Anyway, I've got Patrick Kelly on the line, president of Teamsters Local 952 out in California. He's the secretary treasurer out there. Patrick, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you.
Along with some of the other things that the Obama administration is doing that I'm not happy with. Look, I voted for the guy. I supported the guy. But this cross-border trucking thing's got me nuts. I was under the impression that this guy was going to keep it closed. What's going on?
Well, I think that, unfortunately, he's not the change we were waiting for. And he speaks not completely honestly when he campaigns. Unfortunately, a lot of us backed him, but we're very disappointed in what he's doing, and specifically what he's doing with the cross-border trucking. So bad economics, bad karma.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But, you know, one of the things that I've been talking about this cross-border issue is I think it's a lesson to be learned what exactly tariffs will do when talking about trade policy.
Well, I think that this is really sort of like deregulation on steroids. I don't know how old you are, but I came into the labor movement in the 1960s when we still had a lot of New Deal legislation that regulated the trucking and airline as well as the financial sector. Then in the 70s, we ended up under Jimmy Carter and some of our so-called liberal buddies like Ted Kennedy, pushed through deregulation, and they started with the airlines and with the trucking sector. And now, of course, with NAFTA, SHAFTA, what we call it, we've got deregulation on the borders with respect to trucking, not just deregulation between the states. So it's all a disaster, and it's going to get worse. And at one time, I know you have a lot of Teamsters probably listen to your show and non-Teamsters, but we had about 700,000 people under our master freight agreement at one time, and now we were lucky if we have 50,000. We had 1 million more members at that point in time, 1980, before than we do now. We have 1.4, and we had 2.4.
That, to me, is just mind-blowing. And, you know, you look at the trucking industry right as it is right now, and, you know, I can't imagine it getting much worse. I know people who live in their trucks like caged animals, home maybe 4 or 5 days a year. This is what the industry has turned into. And sadly, with this open border, with these Mexican-domiciled trucks coming across the border, I only see that getting worse.
Well, you're right. And I can tell you tomorrow, the Teamsters with our general president and also some folks from the owner-operators, the Independent Association, are going to be down on the border right near San Diego, and we're going to have a press conference. And as I understand, some of the trucks started coming across today in Texas under the pilot program. And I'm sure that this is probably going to lead to a bunch of picket line activity and a lot of demonstrations. And obviously, for those of us that are that grew up and have prospered in the trucking sector, we are a bunch of very, very unhappy campers. And it doesn't bode well for the Democrats next year.
No, it doesn't. You know, I hearken back to the Greyhound strikes of the 70s and 80s, and I wonder if we're going to see some of the unfortunate things that popped up around that.
Well, I don't know about that, but I can tell you I've been reading a lot lately about the PATCO strike and Reagan union busting and stuff, but a lot of the real negative stuff started before PATCO. It started when Carter and Kennedy and a bunch of other sort of laissez-faire free marketeer types started out with a vengeance to repeal the New Deal legislation, specifically deregulated the trucking and airline sector. Then, of course, they went on, and Clinton continued it, you know, with wiping out Glass-Steagall and all these different things. But you've got a lot of people, which we out here in L.A. call hedge fund Democrats. They take their dough from Wall Street, and they do Wall Street's bidding, and once in a while, or when it's politically convenient, they support us. And you can see the manipulations that are going on. It's pretty sorry that the president has to kind of bull a bunch of the Democratic leadership into going along with them, and then going ahead and making the deal with Biner and those folks to pass the last three free trade deals. Now, some of the more pro-labor people that did vote for Korea did not vote, to their credit, for Colombia, where they're actually taking people out and shooting people that are organizing unions. But I think it shows the need for probably a different way of doing politics than we've been doing it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. You know, you look at what's going on around the country with all these occupations. Here in Harrisburg, we've got an Occupy the Harrisburg, and out your way, there are a number of folks we've talked to who are doing the same thing, and you could feel the anger, the frustration, because, you know, the president did say, you know, we're going to have change you can believe in. I'm just not seeing it, but my problem is I look at the Republicans, and they've just gone from nuts to insane.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, that's true. We don't really have a very good alternative, and we'll probably end up supporting the Democrats. But, you know, like the area that you're based in, at one time, a lot of those folks that are you know, out there doing Occupy Wall Street out there, at one time there was a very, very strong trucking presence in Harrisburg, and a lot of these younger people could have gone and worked as checkers or as dockmen or even as truck drivers around the Harrisburg area. But now I imagine it takes a lot of seniority to hold a good job on those freight docks that you have around there.
Yeah, I spent 18 years working for Roadway, and, you know, the reality is you're absolutely right. Anyone with 10-year seniority, most of those folks are gone. And it's unfortunate, yeah, because those are good family-sustaining jobs, good wage, good benefits that, you know, the rest of the industry, not so much.
Well, there was a time when a lot of us basically worked as casuals or extras and went to college or went part to college and either worked on the freight docks as casuals or, of course, some of us ended up acquiring seniority and keeping those jobs. But Harrisburg used to be an extremely vibrant trucking sort of oasis, a place where people could go that didn't have a lot of education, as long as they had a strong back and they could count and do the checking and read and write a little bit, they could get a good job there. And I don't think that's there now. I don't know, but I just doubt if that's there for people.
Well,
because there's so much layoff there, there's probably some companies that are still hiring, but it's not like where there was thousands and thousands of union jobs at one time and opened up employment for hundreds or if not thousands of people every year.
Yep.
You know?
You're right. And that has diminished in the economy. And, you know, the reality is when Yellow bought Roadway, that all went south as well. The sad things going on there. But let's bring this back to the cross-border trucking issue, because as you've said, this used to be the trucking hub. This was one of the big areas, and it still is because this I-81 corridor hooks into the I-69, which comes right out of Mexico. So once that border's fully open, you will see
A lot of Mexican domiciled vehicles coming right up into this area. So I want to talk a little bit about safety because some of the numbers that we're seeing, some of the safety inspection, really very troubling.
It is definitely lacking. And as you noticed, also on a peripheral issue on the government, doesn't look like they're going to have to do a really thorough environmental impact statement. And a lot of the tractors that are coming up there are not going to, they're going to be polluting a lot more than the ones that are up here, and not even getting into the safety issues of like whether the brakes are inspected. They're not going to be inspecting these tractors and these trailers that are coming up there. And where it's going to really be killer is the truckload freight that's going to come up. It's not going to be so much LTL initially. It'll be solid loads. And your trucking audience knows what a solid load is. Those are the loads, the intermodal type loads that are going to be coming right out of Mexico. There could be containers. They're building deep water ports down there. They're trying to do their railroad infrastructure. They're going to shoot those trailers in those cans, which we call them cans, the containers. They're going to shoot them up throughout the United States, and they're going to knock the hell out of the people that are doing truckload work first.
Yep.
And then, of course, eventually, if this is at all successful, they'll re-domicile a lot of the distribution, and they'll move the warehouses, and they'll be like the new maquiladoras, and they'll have warehouses down there. They'll have Mexicans that live in Mexico driving the trucks. They'll have Mexican citizens loading and unloading the freight and doing the selecting at the warehouses, and they'll shoot those up into Southern California and into Texas and other areas, and some of them will turn right around, and the other ones will just go straight forward and make their delivery and then probably pick up some freight and come back. It's a disaster, and I'll tell you, it's the type of thing that could pick off enough people that could put California in play. I'm not kidding you.
Well, I'm right there with you. But you look at this area where we're at, up on this I-81, I-78 area here, there are a lot of big warehouses. Because, you know, that's, you know, we figured out how to draw them away from other areas because of the location. But what you're saying is a lot of those warehouses could conceivably be empty, moved down south to the south of the border, and those people could just make those deliveries right up here and probably a lot cheaper.
Well, I think that I think it's a greater threat for Texas and for California and Arizona than it is for you guys. But I'll tell you, it's a serious threat in terms of that the inbound and outbound solid loads. Like you've got a lot of freight that comes into those warehouses around you that are brought in by like companies like Swift and Schneider and Knight and companies like that. How in the heck are they going to compete? Even though they're non-union, they won't be able to compete with Mexican domicile drivers that are working for $20 a day. Come on, give me a break. I was born at night, but not last night.
Right. Let me ask you the last question I've got for you, last area. You know, one of the things we keep hearing is, well, you know, we're going to be able to keep an eye on them. We're going to put the onboard recorders. We're going to follow their records. They're going to have to follow the same standards. I guess the question is one, are we going to have the same standards? Because I hold a CDL. It's pretty restrictive. Two, who's going to be the one keeping an eye on this stuff? Do I have to rely on the Mexican government? And three, how much is it going to cost me? Because I know I'm going to get stuck with this bill.
Well, it's definitely going to cost all of us, and I'll tell you, it's going to cost us in jobs. And the enforcement, Mexico enforcing anything, look at how well their enforcement is working just trying to deal with the drug cartels, let alone with the trucking sector. It's not going to happen. It goes back to just like when Clinton pushed through NAFTA, same type of thing. They couldn't get it through. The Democrats couldn't do it, the Republicans couldn't do it, but then Clinton partnered with a bunch of Republicans and a few Democrats. It was going to create a lot of jobs. Same thing with PNTR with China. The bottom line is it's cost us millions and millions of jobs. You can go to Pennsylvania, Illinois, anywhere, and you can see the devastation that these trade agreements have made. And this stuff with cross-border trucking is just another aspect of trade agreements. Like I said, it's just like deregulation on steroids.
Another failed neoliberal policy.
Well, I'll tell you, we do need some fair regulation. I mean, we're not even getting real enforcement, I think, from the Department of Labor on a lot of things. If you dig down, you're not seeing the enforcement that we'd hope that we would get under a different government. We're getting similar enforcement. A lot of the Bush supervisors are still in place. They're not. Ask the construction trades back there if they're getting enforcement on prevailing wage determinations. You won't be surprised by the answer.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I got an email real quick. Somebody wanted me to ask. Do you see any? Why are we only talking about the Mexicans coming into the U.S.? Do you see any possibility? Now, as a driver, there's no way in a cold day in Hades I'd be driving in Mexico. But why do you see this as only a one-way agreement?
Well, I don't see a lot of people going down into Mexico. Look, you've had tens of thousands of people executed in Mexico, for various reasons, a lot of it having to do with drugs. And let's face it, one of the ways the drugs get around are certainly on trucks. I think that there's going to be a lot of, U.S. domicile drivers are going to be very, very reluctant and hesitant to go into Mexico. I don't see that. Long term, they need to organize unions in Mexico and not blanco phony unions. But again, we need to do the same thing here. We need to organize unions. So,
absolutely.
But I think most American domiciled or even Canadian domiciled drivers are not going to be looking forward to going down into Mexico. Yeah. I don't see that at any time soon.
Yeah, they're not taking their shiny bumpers south of the border. Patrick Kelly, I appreciate the time, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 952. Great talking to you. Thanks so much, and keep the fight up down there. Keep us safe, man.
Yeah, don't mourn, organize. Thank you.
There you go. I'm going to take a quick break. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Any questions, comments, something on your mind, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. So I guess last night on the Rachel Maddow show, she was talking about George H.W. Bush when he ran in 1988. And what's interesting is she claims that his first pick would have been Clint Eastwood. I guess my clips aren't working. Would have been Clint.
Go ahead, make my day.
Or instead of go ahead, make my potato with an E. So he chose Dan Quayle, and I'm sure most people don't get that reference. But Dan Quayle could not have been really publicly made George Bush look like a brainiac. The son, not the old man. The old man was, you got to give him credit. He was actually a war hero, actually had some credentials other than being the son of a former president. But I think maybe Clint Eastwood over Mr. Potato. What do you think?
I would take him over. I think he's more of a mainstream conservative, actually. Actually, he was well-liked out in California.
He was the mayor of Carmel, California,
yes,
for a long, long time. Which I guess was more of a ceremonial position than an actual position. So anyway, do you remember the joke we talked about last night, the big joke? The Herman Cain joke, the real rib-splitting, side funny knee slapper. We're gonna electrify the fence. And then he said, oh, man, just a joke, didn't mean it. Well, yesterday he was at a news conference with Sheriff Joe, and he said that, well, we might electrify this fence. Sure, we might. He says, quote, let me say first, it was a joke, and some people don't think it was a good joke. And it's probably not a joke you're supposed to make if you're a presidential candidate. I apologize, he said, if it offended anyone. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea. Somebody ought to smack him. But the reality is it didn't sound like a joke. And he says, I think we're splitting hairs here, the Cain train replied. I don't apologize for using a combination of a fence, and it might be electrified. I'm not walking away from that. I just don't want to offend anyone. I think you did, Just kind of I think you did that, man. It was dumb. Admit it, you're dumb. It was a dumb thing. Anyway, I got an email. And the more we're learning, when you get to be front runner status, everybody's looking at everything you've ever done, which is why I never want to be president. I'm sure there are things that I have completely forgotten that they would dig up. I'm sure that there are things during my drunken haze from about 15 through about 25, that period right there where you're finding out who you are. You're making the journey to who you're going to be as an adult. And look, a lot of people say, well, you seem to have it together. Yeah, it was a long trip getting here. I'm here, but it was a long trip. I made a bunch of mistakes, did a lot of dumb stuff, and I've forgotten most of them. I'm not going to say that there are skeletons in my closet. I just don't know them. But if you run for any office, you run for especially the presidency of the United States, they are going to dig up every time you took a dump in the woods. And they may actually produce the actual product. So the Herman Cain train, and I got this email with a link to the Herman Cain train's article titled The Perfect Conservative. And it's kind of an interesting read. So I figured I'd go through a little bit of it with you. He wrote on December 20th, I guess it was a Monday, a couple years back. He was not born into a royal family, but he left a royal impression on the world. For 30 years, he learned the ways of the world without becoming of the world. He then changed the world for the better. He led without a mandate. He taught without a script. His common sense parables filled people with promise and compassion, his words forever inspiring. He never condemned what others believed, just sin, evil, and corruption. He helped the poor without one government program. He healed the sick without a government health care system. He fed the hungry without food stamps. And everywhere he went, it turned into a rally, attracting large crowds and giving them hope, encouragement, and inspiration. For 3 years, he was unemployed and never collected an unemployment check. Nevertheless, he completed all the work he needed to get done. He didn't travel by private jet. He walked and sailed, and sometimes on a donkey. But they made him walk when he was arrested and taken to jail, and no, he was not read any Miranda rights. He was arrested for just being who he was and doing nothing wrong. When they tried him in court, he never mumbled a word. He didn't have a lawyer, nor did he care about who was judging him. His judge was a higher power. Here it comes, the punchline. The liberal court found him guilty of false offenses and sentenced him to death because he changed the hearts and minds of men with an army of 12. Never before, and not since, has there ever been such a perfect conservative. Any idea who he is?
He's talking about Jesus Christ, I believe.
Yes, he is. And I'm going, wait a second.
Wow. You must have read a different Bible than me.
I'm sorry, but liberal court? Liberal court? You mean the people who are against the death penalty? The people who are in favor of health care for all? People who, feeding people, doing all the things that Jesus really talked about? You mean those liberals? It's mind-blowing how easily they rewrite history. It is just amazing how nobody seems to really care. And what's even more amazing is while he was a director of corporations, he was raking in millions of dollars of stimulus money. You know, he was the head guy for a while. And he was on the board of AGCO Corporation. Collected $222,000 from them as a farm products company, and he also took about $250,000 from Whirlpool. Those companies received big stimulus money. AGCO, $5 million in stimulus. Whirlpool took a whole bunch. I think it was almost $20 million. And you go right down the list, man, and this guy's a who's who of the insider filling his pockets. Making sure everyone's, I mean, this board gig is really something special. I mean, the guy serves on a couple of boards, makes 120 grand here, a couple hundred grand here. How much did he make sitting on boards? And lastly, before we take a quick break, evidently the Herman Cain train, people are kind of looking into a couple of news reports, raising questions about his campaign funds. Evidently they're claiming that he was buying his own book. From a motivational speaking company that he runs. So he was using campaign money to buy a book that he wrote from himself and then charging the people. It actually debuted at number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list. So the question I have, is he gaming the system? Is this another example of the Herman Cain train using that business savvy, that ability to take a little bit of money here and, oh, I don't know, position it in such a way? Number 4 for his book? Just a question. Quick break, back after this.
The list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling.
Proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Ford UAW workers wrap up their voting on the tentative labor agreement today. On Monday, voting by Ford workers in support of the tentative UAW contract was 58% approval. UAW President Bob King is touting job creation in the contracts and a 20% raise for some new hires. Most UAW workers at Ford, GM, and Chrysler did not get wage increases, but will receive bonuses and profit sharing instead. For anybody wondering why the Occupy movement is protesting, Occupy DC organizer Kevin Zeese sums it up. In a blog, Zeese says this is why people are protesting. Because the people need to take power from the political and economic elites who have destroyed the economy and have us trapped in war quagmires around the world, Zeese writes. Because we need to end corporate rule that favors gluttonous profits for the wealthiest while the basic necessities of tens of millions are not met. Because we need to immediately end wars of the American Empire that have literally killed and displaced millions of innocent people. Zeese concluded by saying, we occupy to create a more perfect union where participatory democracy replaces the rule of concentrated wealth. Some major retailers are closing stores just as the holiday shopping season gets into gear. Jesse Russell reports.
The second largest home improvement chain in the country is shuttering 20 stores and laying off nearly 2,000 employees. The Lowe's home improvement chain closed 10 of the stores earlier this month, with the remaining stores turning off the lights in November. The company has also dialed down the rate in which it opens new stores. Lowe's will open 10 or 15 new stores in 2012, as opposed to the previous average of 30 stores per year. Gap and Talbot's have also announced plans to close stores. The clothing retailers are suffering from anemic sales as they enter the 2011 holiday shopping season. Combined, they'll shutter more than 300 stores. Gap plans to close 200 out of their 900 shops. The clothing retailer is planning to change the way it does business. Instead of being a Gap brand specialty retailer, the store will now focus on affordability. The company has seen a 22% year-over-year decline in operating income.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association and by the United Mine Workers of America. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. So you think is it wrong for the Herman Cain train to buy his own book? Bloomberg and Talking Points memo both went through. They went through all of the GOP presidential candidates' campaign finance reporting forms. And, you know, some of the interesting things that have come out that, you know, Herman Cain actually, I think, spent like $400 eating at Perkins. You know, some of the restaurants, in fact, spent a whole boatload of money on Domino's Pizza and not Godfather's Pizza. Kind of makes you wonder about the good Godfather Pizza, former CEO of Godfather Pizza. But anyway, his book, This is Herman Cain, My Journey to the White House, like I said, debuted at number 4. And the question you've got to ask is, how many copies did he buy? How much of this did he get himself into? And I think it's important for people to realize that number 4 is a pretty impressive thing. You're on the top 10 bestseller list, and I think people need to ask, did he do it himself? Did he buy his own books? And you remember there was a story several years back where someone figured out how to game the bestseller system, bought like 12,000 books and debuted in the top 10 because they figured out how to game the system. I don't put anything past. This is a smart guy. This is a guy who knows how to game the system. This is a guy who knows how to play the game. And the question is how much of this money did he stick in his pocket? You know, is this another Christine O'Donnell situation where, you know, she's taking campaign money to enrich herself? Interesting questions. And, you know, Herman, you know, the more he's in the spotlight,
well, the more he tends to put his foot in his mouth. And I don't know if you saw this story from Israel where Benjamin Netanyahu agreed to release more than 1,000 Palestinian prisoners for this one soldier. So the Herman Cain train was asked by Wolf Blitzer, you know, what would you do, Hermie? How would you handle it? And, well, here's what he said.
Could you imagine if you were president, we're almost out of time, and there were one American soldier who had been held for years, and the demand was Al-Qaeda or some other terrorist group, you got to free everyone at Guantanamo Bay, yes. Several hundred prisoners at Guantanamo. Could you see yourself as president authorizing that kind of transfer?
I could see myself authorizing that kind of transfer, but what I would do is I would make sure that I got all of the information, I got all of the input, considered all of the options, and then the president has to be the president and make a judgment call. I could make that call if I had to.
And he could make that call, and you know what would happen the next day? They would kidnap somebody else, and you would see the amount of American soldiers and American citizens across this country. Grabbed for Twinkies. They would be grabbed in the middle of anywhere for whatever bizarre demands any terrorist group or any Twinkie group would want. Again, here's a guy not quite getting it. You want to take that position, that's a dangerous position. Don't you think?
I tend to agree with you. I think
I can't believe he said that.
No, I think his problem is he's a charm. He's charming in his own way, but as it goes on, now we're starting to look into his positions, and more and more and more, he's a little bit like the governor of Texas. The more and more you get him on the spot and ask him to really explain in detail his positions on some real critical issues, he's not up to the game.
So you remember me talking about Pat Toomey when he was running during the election? He had talked a little bit about, Hey, things would have been tougher if I were in charge. When the economy collapsed, they were talking about, what should we do? How should we handle with it? What would he do if he were in power? And here were a couple of clips he said during that period.
We would have had probably a tough, road down. I think the markets might have hit lower lows. I think we might have had even a bigger spike in some of the other problems. But we would be on a road for a sustainable recovery.
Yeah, it would be much harder down, but we'd be on a road to sustainable recovery, meaning the investor class would have taken, pretty much all of our stuff. It would have been a hard down. There'd have been more foreclosures, more job losses, more of the negative stuff that the Obama recovery bill did stop. He reiterated.
I think we would have had a harder down. I think we would have taken a hard down. Look at the mortgage.
A harder down. Look at the mortgage thing. We propped it up. We held it up. And it hasn't gone down. So Mitt Romney was asked, what are you going to do about foreclosures? What are you going to do about the housing situation? And, here's what Mitt said.
As to what to do for the housing industry specifically, and are the things that you can do to encourage housing? One is don't try and stop the foreclosure process. Let it run its course and hit the bottom, allow investors to buy homes, put renters in them, fix the homes up, and let it turn around and come back up. The Obama administration has slow walked the foreclosure processes that have long existed, and as a result, we still have a foreclosure overhang.
They had that overhang. Those people who are still living in their houses don't need that. Understand what this guy is going to do. He's already told. He just told you. The foreclosure thing, all you folks who are on the edge hoping for a lifeline, hoping for a modification, well, you know what? You're SOL. They're going to let the banks go in, and even with all of the problems, the robo-signing and all of the missing documents and all of the stuff that goes along with it, they are going to, if he becomes president, it will be full force, full-fledged ahead, kicking people out of their homes and allowing investors to come in and buy them. I mean, he said it. Let it run its course. Hit the bottom. Allow investors to buy up the homes, put renters in them, fix them up, and then let it turn around. Investors, like him. Not families. Not the people who that's their dream, that's their life. Nope, not them. Let's worry about getting jobs so that people can afford to pay the mortgage. Nope. Take those houses back. Take them away. Sell them at rock-bottom prices to investors who will then rent them back to the people who own them, and thus have a permanent Have a permanent cash flow. Sounds like a great plan to me. Yeah, let's screw the heck with those people. Kick them to the curb. It's a good growth industry. We could hire a bunch of people to become deputy sheriffs to go in and throw people's stuff out in the middle of the street. Big fun. Don't you think? Good stuff?
No, not for the people involved.
Yeah, but here's what bothers me. Obama has done almost nothing. The modifications that he promised, the programs that they were trying to lay out, where are they? And the jobs plans, you know, a lot of this stuff goes away if you have a jobs plan. And I look at Frank Lautenberg from New Jersey, who's saying, look, we need a 21st century WPA. We need to get people back to work. And Lautenberg's an interesting character because his father, during the Great Depression, worked on one of those WPA crews. That's how his family survived. And I go back and I think about my great-grandfather, who, fortunately, he was able to find work turning bricks over. That they went down the one side of the street, put the bricks in, came back up the other side, and turned them over. You had to get people back to work. And even if it was doing busy work, they were earning wages, they were paying taxes, and they were supporting themselves. And that, in that, putting money into people's pockets, giving them a sense of purpose and self-dignity, you turn the economy around. We need to be doing similar things. There are so many things that need to be done. We need new water treatment plants. We need new pipes. Every time you turn around, you hear stories of, well, the pipes crumbled. They're 100 years old. You know, we haven't fixed them since the Depression era. We've got schools that need to be replaced. We've got fire departments that need to be built. We've got roads that definitely need it. We need a whole bunch of stuff done. There's work to be done. And we've got workers who are sitting idly by going, please, I want a job. This is not a tough decision. This is not rocket science. This does not take a genius to figure out. You've got a workforce that wants to work. You've got work that needs to be done. Interest rates are dirt cheap. Borrow some money, get them back to work, and as the economy picks up, you pay those loans back. Basic 100-level economics.
We don't have to do busy work, Rick. There's so much that we can do. There's so much that we can do. You know, I actually talked to one guy. I think he's still living. He worked in the CCC, and he said, hey, I picked up a trade. You know, if we do it right, we can do the same thing. We can give people the wherewithal to earn a living for the rest of their life. If we're committed, certainly we don't have to make busy work. Look at all the bridges. Look at all the infrastructure that needs work. My God, we probably have enough work for the next 50 years, if you really want to be honest.
I mean, you could get into just your community, all the things that go undone. If you don't want to, you know, you want to get in, because look, you're picking up trash on the side of the highway, that could harm somebody's job. You know, caulking granny's windows. Nobody's doing that. Granny's not doing that. She's sitting there with blankets on, and she's taking money from LIHEAP. There's a lot of things that we can do to save in a very smart fashion. But here again, it's going to take will. It's going to take leaders. It's going to take statesmen. And I fear we don't have those. There are a lot of jobs plans out there. The House Democrats have one. The Senate Democrats have one. The House Republicans have something. The Senate Republicans have that piece of garbage they came out with. Obama's got, I think, three now. There's the one that had to be taken as a whole. There's the one, we're going to do this in two parts, and now it's the one that's in little itsy-bitsy pieces. Again, you know, cave. The Democratic Progressive Caucus, they've got the people's budget with a jobs plan in it. Yet nobody wants to talk about, hey, how about we take all of these ideas, pick out the stuff that's going to benefit the people who are unemployed, benefit the working people. Look, we've really done a very nice job of enriching the wealth class. We really have. We've created a very large billionaire class. We should be proud of that. We should pat ourselves on the back. Hooray for us. We've got the most billionaires. We win. We win the billionaire race. Give us the gold medal, put a certificate in the mail, whatever we need to do to make ourselves feel better. But then focus policy on how we how we grow that middle class again, how we get people back to work, how we give people dignity again. You know, some of the people that I've met, and I'm still hung up on the one guy that you know, about my age, with kids about my kid's age, who lost his job September 2008 in the first wave and hasn't been able to find full-time consistent employment since. Burned through his savings, burned through his 401k, lost his house, moved to an apartment that was, you know, reasonable size, end up losing that, having to move to a smaller place. You know, I can only imagine the tensions that happen in a relationship. You know, you want to talk about family values? Why don't we get that guy some dignity of saying, you know what, we're going to get you a full-time job for a while. And you're going to be able to work, and you're going to be able to save, and you're going to be able to have that pride of looking at your kid's eyes and knowing that the kid knows you. I mean, there's still something in our culture about that. Especially for men, I think it's more important for men to have that. And you can say, oh, he's misogynist. You can say whatever you want about me. But I think males are just wired a little bit differently, that, especially if you've got kids, that they look like something in their eyes of the kids, or so they feel. Or am I off base?
No, you're not off base, but that doesn't take away from the fact that there's a lot of mothers out there trying to raise their kids by themselves that are in trouble, too. But I understand what you're saying, Rick. If I can just for a minute, you know, I can't imagine what the Republicans, when it comes to jobs, would agree with. As long as it comes from the president, their answer is no. They don't, you know, truth be known, they don't even have to know what it is. It's a jobs bill coming from the president. The answer is no. And I know some of the proposals of the president you didn't particularly like. The irony is that the Republicans last year and even the year before were for some of these programs, tax Yep. breaks for business, tax breaks for small business. Even the president, to his credit, was even going to target unemployed ex-veterans. And the Republicans said no.
Now, how
they
can you be against no. that?
How can
and
you?
They filibustered it. It's nuts. Nuts. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, comments, questions, something on your mind, back after this.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
And just like that, she was gone. Sarah Palin, the phantasmagoric shooting star of far right-wing wackiness, has formally bowed out of the 2012 presidential race. Apparently, her decision was God-sent. We can assume this because in her 2008 vice presidential run, Palin explained her decision-making process to us on a Fox TV show. I'm like, okay, God, if there's an open door for me somewhere, this is what I always pray, I'm like, don't let me miss the open door. Show me where the open door is, even if it's just cracked up a little bit. Maybe I'll plow right on through that, maybe prematurely plow through it, but don't let me miss an open door. Eons from now, archaeologists will unearth this truly awesome and breathless sentence and say, huh? But for us political observers today, that burst of Palinese simply translates to this: God showed Sarah the door. In breaking the news of her departure from the political stage, the Fox Made Millionaire trotted out her family again, declaring that she decided not to run out of respect for them. And out of respect for polls showing that only 21% of Americans have a favorable opinion of her. Also, get this. 3/4 of the Republican primary voters said they did not want her in the race. But let's give her credit. Yes, she's shown herself to be an incoherent, frighteningly unqualified, and far-out political figure. But without her, the door would not have opened for Michelle Bachmann, Rick Perry, and other incoherent, frighteningly unqualified, and far-out Republican contenders. This is Jim Hightower saying, Palin would probably give credit to God for opening the door for Bachmann, Perry, and company, but I don't think God hates America that much. So take a bow, Sarah. You earned this one.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving through their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website. Or if you have a smartphone, get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. If you've got anything on your mind, questions, comments, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Gonna love this. Father of the Year Award going on tonight. Agency France Press reports a 9-year-old girl asked police why they pulled her over when she was, quote, driving good after her drunken father got her to drive his van in the middle of the night. The girl was sitting on a booster seat in the big red van, but somehow managed to reach the pedals and was even careful to use her turn signals. She said, I parked. You could hear it on the gas station surveillance video. Her father, Sean Weimer, 39, of Brownstown Township, Michigan, bragged openly about his daughter being the designated driver before dancing his way back to the van. His daughter parked at the pump just before, get this, 3 a.m. Father of the Year Award? Jeez, oh, man. Amazing. Police pulled her over, took them away, and, well, he faces a whole litany of charges, and he should. And a beating should come with that. You know, I'm not often in favor of police brutality. Here's one of those cases where I think I'd be okay with it. One of those things. I don't condone it usually.
You mean he's not an exemplary father?
Yeah, this is one of those times where you go, maybe a couple of backhands, something.
What were you thinking?
He obviously was not. He was obviously drinking. And speaking of drinking and not thinking, does the name Randy Hopper mean anything to anyone? Anyone? Randy was the Wisconsin state senator who was recalled. In fact, he was, you know, his wife even signed the recall petition because evidently he was living elsewhere with his mistress. Well, Randy lost his job in the recall election, and now he's down and desperate, and I guess he's drinking. And Randy got picked up for DUI. So there you go. He was at the Festival Foods parking lot. There was a single passenger car. And, of course, the 25-year-old mistress, she was there. And he was arrested, you know, given the whole DUI cocktail.
And who said justice is dead?
You know, his wife has got to be just laughing all the way to the...
Hysterical.
Exactly. I mean, it's just... but, you know, the thing is, you know, you look at what happened in Wisconsin, and I'm sure, you know... Mr. Hopper was at one point maybe a decent human being. Who knows? But you look what happened there. And just the raw power, the raw abuse of power. You know, this guy who thought, you know, I got the world by the short hairs. I got the wife at home with the kids, and I'm a powerful person, and I got my mistress lobbyist girlfriend. You know, life was good. Scott Walker came to town, screwed it all up. Wow.
Well, hopefully we can put Mr. Walker in a similar situation come this recall.
Now, I'm hoping, but you know, I'm looking at the possibility of all the... Well, we talked with Malin Mitchell last night, and he said that for a gubernatorial race, they may raise upwards of $70 million.
Oh, he's the darling of the Republican Party.
And the reality is the Koch brothers could write that check themselves. And that's why I say the mass accumulation of wealth, whatever your belief is, well, we should be as rich, as stinking rich as I want to be, so rich that you can, you have the ability to dictate what happens in the country singularly. See, to me, this whole mass accumulation
of power and wealth is dangerous. What happened to one person, one vote? When you have the ability to write a check for $10, $20, $30, $50 million, $70 million, what candidate can compete against that?
Well, and here for Mr. Walker, I mean, let's be honest, even if he loses, you can bet the moneyed interest will take care of him. They have plans for him.
Maybe they'll give him Rick Santorum's job as the foreign policy expert at some think tank.
Well, time will tell. I hope this recall effort destroys his political career, but I'm not so sure it will. He's got some powerful people on his side.
I wish I could be a right winger. I wish I could, be one of those where they would take care of me.
They do take care of them.
Give me a nice job as a bikini watcher on a beach somewhere.
Now think about it. Where else could you find a job like that, false news after you got humiliated in a U.S. Senate election, lost by 17 points? Senator Casey crushed him in 06. Where does he show up? All of a sudden, he's a foreign policy advisor. Must be nice.
And making twice as much money, I'm sure.
I'm sure he was.
Well, and then he can have his kids educated in Virginia where they lived instead of doing it here, claiming they were residents of Pennsylvania.
And that was a nice little lady. Boy, there is justice in this world, Rick. If you remember, that's how he got in Congress. He defeated Doug Waldron by claiming that, this guy's phony. He doesn't have his residence here in Pennsylvania. Imagine that. And he won the election, and a couple years later, that was one of the many issues he got defeated on. He did the exact same thing.
But here in the coming days, and I guess the middle of November, they're going to start collecting signatures there in Wisconsin. In Ohio, the election day is coming up pretty soon. I'm hoping that we're going to be there in Ohio on the ground, do some interviewing, talking to people there about the issue of issue two, which was SB 5. If I remember right, the whole stealing of collective bargaining rights away from workers in Ohio. And look, when they went out and they got the signatures, they blew away the number they needed. There's a pretty good chance that they're gonna repeal this, much like they did with the workers' comp attack bill that they had a couple years prior. So Ohio has a track record of going back and overturning some of this stuff. But what again, like I said, coming back to the community where my grandmother lives, there are neighbors who now won't talk to each other because of this issue. And again, even if they lose, they have won the battle of division. They have won the battle of putting barriers between neighbors and working class people. Again, sliced, diced, divided. That's their shtick. And what I like about the occupation movement, to bring it back to that, is people are talking. You may be way out on the fringe, but somebody's going to listen to you. And you may not quite look like the mainstream, but somebody's going to listen to you. And that's what I find interesting. It's more about the we, and a lot of the things that I've seen harken back to Wisconsin. Setting up medical areas, setting up committees on who's going to do what. The whole idea of society, the things that we need to get done, the tasks that have to be done in any society, setting that up and doing it for yourself. Now, we need to talk about that on a national scale. What are the things as a society we need? And I would argue that you need health care. You need education. You need 21st century transportation. You need an awful lot of things. And it's that conversation that's being had that I think is scaring the hell out of the investor class. Because they can't have us actually talking to people. And as I said, one of the exciting things about this, people are coming out of the shadows. People are coming out of their homes. People are coming out from behind their screens to look somebody else in the eye and actually have a conversation. I've met some very, very interesting people over the years who I've had some online conversations with, and it's amazing. It's amazing how the tone of the conversation changes from when you think you have anonymity and distance to when you're looking somebody in the face. I think George Carlin had a bit about it, about the amount of an a-hole someone is directly proportionate to how far they are away from you at the time when you realize that flaw. Someone way down the road is pretty much of him, somebody next to you on the line is pretty much of him, So I think the more we talk to each other and we look each other in the eye and have these conversations, I think the more civil we'll be for one, and maybe the more open to compromise, more open to actual thinking and thoughts and discussion. Just a hope, just a thought. Quick break, back after this with Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around, back after this.
Smith Show. The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. I'm sure you saw this. According to NBC, the president's teleprompter and all of his equipment was stolen, along with the truck that it was in, from outside the Courtyard Marriott Hotel there in Virginia. I'm sure the right wing is just all just happy as can be, the president without his teleprompter. Anyway, here to talk to us about what's going on in D.C. and across the world, our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, I can't imagine. I'm sure your right-wing hosts that you talk to, they've just got to be just thrilled to death that, you know, their punchline has come true.
Their punchline has come true. What's really interesting is that as of late this afternoon, they didn't know who took that truck.
So any idea? Just somebody stole it?
It looks like somebody just stole it, obviously not realizing they were dealing with federal property.
Uh-oh.
You know, it's very interesting. In the olden days, they used to have the presidential seal out, right? And people used to steal the seal and, you know, used to sell it on all those places, see it on all those places around Washington that sells things like that. And then they made it actually a federal offense to steal the seal.
And so now that in and of itself. So my question, I guess I had when I saw this, you know, his truck was his teleprompter, all of his stuff. He wasn't staying in a Courtyard Marriott hotel, was he?
No, but he wasn't really staying at the fanciest hotel either, really.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, I mean, he was just kind of staying at a regular place, and he ate at a very regular place on the way.
Wow.
Yeah, no. This is not fancy.
Not the Perkins like Herman Cain, now.
Right. Who, by the way, is doing very well in Florida.
He's doing very well all over the place. He's a likable guy. He's portraying a very likable character. He's playing a good role. He's an advertising guy. He knows how to present himself. He knows how to play that game.
He really does know how to play the game, and I think that, you know, we're going to continue to see him do very well, and this is just sending the Republican Party out to outer space, because they are behind Romney.
Well, yeah, they are, but, I mean, he wouldn't be a bad choice either. I think he's right in line with their thoughts and goals. I don't think he's going to get the party nomination, because I don't think he can raise the money. But like you said, he's, you know, got a good relationship with the Koch brothers, proud of his relationship. You know, the fact that Americans for Prosperity and all them, I'm sure he's pretty happy with that.
Well, at least he'll give he's going to give Romney a little run for his money.
Yeah. And speaking of, like, Americans for Prosperity, I guess FreedomWorks in the news, the Tea Party people, they want to, I guess, pursue the Ron Paul plan, basically abolish all of government?
They do. They certainly want to abolish HUD, and they want to abolish the Department of Education. They want to make Fannie and Freddie privatized, so they would have nothing to do with the government.
Well, you know, there's an argument to be made for the Freddie and Fannie, but, education, I'm sure they want energy gone, too. That was part of the Ron Paul plan. Basically, any planning, any thought for the future, we're going to get rid of that, and we're going to stick to the invisible guy with that invisible hand.
Right. Can you imagine?
No, I can't. Their world scares me. You know, I was on a talk show earlier this morning on one of the local stations, you know, talking about the occupation movement here in Harrisburg, and some guy calls in talking about, well, we need to have natural law.
Give me a break.
I wish I would have.
Remember the natural law party? They were running around Washington, D.C. in these buses called natural law. Give me a whatever.
Well, let's move on then. I don't want to get you all riled up. I know it's been a tough day.
Right. It's late.
The last thing I need is you to be all riled up, because I'm riled up enough for both of us. Evidently, Hillary took a little jaunt off to Libya. What's that about?
Well, it was about the fact that the European Union was there on Monday, and she wanted to make sure we got our little mitts in there and their oil production. And it's also that the United States has an interest in getting rid of shoulder-fired missiles, which apparently Gaddafi had stockpiled. So she went there and gave $11 million, not exactly a lot of money, for medical treatment. 15,000 people were wounded in their war, and 15,000 injured, and 1,500 have had limbs had to be amputated.
Wow. And I wonder where they got those shoulder-fire rockets from.
I bet you they're little Russian products. Maybe Chinese, but mainly Russians. That's who's usually there with. That's who does the arm sales in our world.
Well, along with us. We do a lot of arm sales
we
as well.
We do, too. Yeah. Other than us, that's the second group they go to.
Yeah. Well, in talking about oil, personally, I think we should be cutting all oil subsidies to any of these oil companies. And I guess I have someone on my side, Senator Menendez.
Yes, Senator Menendez is very much on your side. And he and a bunch of other senators and some members of Congress have petitioned the super committee to actually do this. And they are to not have oil subsidies. They said $144 billion was going to be the profits this year. They've made over $1 trillion in the last 10 years.
Wow. And, you give, and maybe I have this wrong, but you give subsidies, you give tax incentives to industries that you want to succeed, that you want to see grow, not to ones that are full grown and exploding and profiting wildly. I mean, I can make no justification for giving these oil companies these big subsidies.
Neither can I, and it is beyond me why they get it.
In fact, we should be taking that money and putting it into renewables, into getting people to put solar panels on their homes, getting the federal government maybe to put solar panels on every building they own. We've got a serious demand problem. I was talking to somebody today who said, he knows a guy who runs a solar company, and they are just stockpiled with product and nowhere to go because, one, nobody's got any money, and, two, they're expensive.
Very expensive. And now it looks like there's, they had last year an initiative to help people in areas heat or, better make their houses available for both heating and air conditioning.
The Cash
and energy
for Talkers
conservation
program.
Right. And they're having trouble administering that program.
That's just mind-blowing me. With all the people who are out of work and all of the senior citizens in this country, you would think there would be a natural, and I like Lautenberg's idea of, a modern-day WPA. Put those people together, the unemployed and the people who need work done, natural idea.
Right.
But, I guess like Churchill said, Americans always do the right thing after trying everything else first.
They do.
So we're in the everything else phase.
We are.
And speaking of everything else, the Republicans, I guess, are, again, tickled pink, all tingly in the panties. They think Obamacare is failing.
Well, they think, yes, because of this one area on a care that involves basically the nursing home kinds of care for people that they're having a hard time making work under the plan. They're basically saying, the Obamacare is just going apart in pieces, and don't worry, everybody, it's not going to exist.
Interesting. Did you see the Michelle Bachmann quote where she said that, I'm pretty narcissistic if you think about it, that the Supreme Court is going to make sure that Obamacare is constitutional, to pretty much take that away from her as a campaign issue?
But I think, her campaign days are running short.
Yeah, I mean, she's way off.
Like after New Hampshire. We'll see you go, and hopefully we'll see you in our New Hampshire primary.
Like I told you, you tell me where and when, and we will find our way there.
We're excited.
All right, Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. I appreciate the time. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
All righty, now to find out what we got going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Rick, there's an interesting story coming out of the AFL-CIO blog about the protests and the General Assembly. There's apparently at all these protests they use the concept of the General Assembly. And in one of these General Assemblies, some of the doctors from the areas around New York, principally the Bronx, came and they talked about some of the stories that they had encountered at this rally. They talked about some of the poorest in the nation, which I didn't know. One of the poorest counties in the nation is, in fact, in the Bronx. Patients come to clinics every day run by this one doctor in particular, and he feels that he can't give them what they need. He said they basically need jobs. He said they need education. He said they need health care for all. All I can give them, according to him, is prescriptions. It's not enough. He also talked about one woman who talks about the anxiety she feels about losing her job and her health care. Even though I'm married, my husband's work, if you were to join the family plan, it's about $700 a month, according to her. We just simply can't afford it. Another woman by the name of Cameron Kelly, a dancer teacher from Westchester, New York, and a mother of $3 in their 20s, said that working families are really struggling. Neither she nor her daughters have health insurance, and her daughters all face student loans, which seems to be very prevalent. A lot of young people who are going to have problems repaying their college loans. Many of these people, many of these young people, look in their future is very bleak. And those who came to the New York protest are very, very similar to people who are coming to protest all over the country. It reflects the diverse, eclectic mix of individuals, each with their own stories of how our economy is adversely affecting their lives and families and robbing the young of a future. This is, sadly, their story. Another chapter in the takeover, Rick. One of these days it'll be the last chapter, but they still keep coming almost on a daily basis. Seems that yesterday the Senate passed the Harrisburg takeover bill by 37-13. That bill will then be passed on to the House. The bill that was authorized by Jeff Pakola, who's a Republican from Dauphin, and Representative Glenn Grill, would then allow the governor to petition Commonwealth Court to appoint a receiver who would be charged with creating a long-term recovery plan and implement the plan as needed. It also creates an advisory panel that would provide non-binding counsel to the receiver. Now, this passed, but I love the answer of a Democrat who was a dissident who voted no on the proposal, and this is what he said, and it does make a lot of sense. Senator John Blake, who's a Democrat from Lackawanna County, who was among those senators who opposed the legislation, he called it an overreach and said it runs contrary to other efforts such as a push for liquor, state privatization, and a push back to the federal health insurance law to reduce government's role in people's lives. And to that I say, touche. One last story. We talk about the economy, and almost every day we hear more and more and more stories of the economy going worse and worse. Now we find out that some of the biggest retailers in the country are really, really having problems. Lowe's is closing 20 stores, laying off about 2,000 people. The Gap and Talbert's is going to close about 300. The Gap plans to close about 200 of its 900 stores. Clothing retailers planning to change the way it does business. Instead of being a Gap brand specialty retailer, the store will focus on affordability. The Gap has seen a 22% year-over-year decline in operating income. It's just more indications of how bad this economy really, really is, and I hope Congress is taking notice. Back to you, Rick.
All righty, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap things up. Stick around. Right back after this.
To the Rick Smith Show.
On June 25, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put a ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Something on your mind, question, comment, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all the emails personally. So today, back in a little bit of history, back in 1648, the Shoemakers of Boston, they organized the first labor organization to be recognized in the country. It was authorized by the Massachusetts Bay Colony. We weren't the U.S. yet, but it was the very first labor organization in the history of our nation. So you know, when you hear people say, well, you know, that's that new hippie liberal stuff of the great new deal. No, in fact, people coming together for better wages, better benefits, better conditions, almost from the beginning of the country, and really almost from the time of people working for other people. And I'm just hoping that out of this occupation movement comes the realization that you can't possibly have a just, fair, equal society without having a just, fair, equal economic distribution of wealth. If you can't afford to take a day off to go to the protest, you can't afford to be part of the revolution. If you're worried that the next day, taking a day off could put you in the street or put you in a position where you can't feed your children, you're generally not going to rise up against the exploitative class, if you will. They've got you where they want you, which is why it was a brilliant plan. No more wage increases. We'll just give you access to credit, lots of cheap credit, and get you hooked into that so that you stay on that treadmill, so that you're constantly at the behest of employers who are paying lower and lower wages. And using trade agreements like these three that Obama's going to sign on Friday, well, using those trade agreements to keep pulling things back. Now, look, you know, people hear me say that, well, you're anti-capitalist. No, I'm not anti-capitalist. I'm anti-laissez-faire capitalist. I'm anti-exploitative capitalism, monopolistic capitalism. Yeah,
I'm against the system that the capitalists seem to love, the boom bust cycles. They create these big bubbles, they make tons of money, they pull out, everything explodes, and people at the bottom 95, 98, 99%, they suffer. Those folks at the top come in, clean up, like Mitt Romney wants to do. Let the foreclosures happen. Let all those people lose their homes. Why? So we can get investors in there to buy those homes up and rent them back to those people. And that's the story of monopolistic capitalism. It grows, and we buy into it. Yes, we're going to all be in that 1%. Understand, there's 1% for a reason. There's only so many slots. We all cannot be there. And on our way up, if it's possible, and it may quite well be, you may have the cure for cancer and just don't know it. On your way up, and this is the thing that's always amazed me, why not make what you leave behind you a little bit better? I remember when I was doing organizing, you go to people and they say, I'm only going to be here a couple of months. I'm moving on to better things. I'm only going to be here 6 months. I'm moving on. I'm going back to school. Gonna be a real professor, a real professional. I'm going to make real money. And you go back 10, 15 years later, and there they are. I fell into the trap myself. I got sucked into the freight industry, quite honestly, in the mid-80s. It was paying, as a casual, $15 an hour in the mid-80s. Top rate back then was like 19-something where I lived in Cleveland. In the mid-80s, $19 an hour was big money. And, you get used to the 60, 70-hour weeks, working all that overtime, double time on Sundays, all that money raking in. You're 20 years old, bringing in $1,500 a week. It's easy to get sucked into it, and I did. And I ended up spending 20 years in the freight business before, I finally went back to school, finished my education, moved on. But it's easy. But those jobs are gone. And I've often told those people, why not on your way up, since you're going places, and thank goodness that you're looking forward and you're going to make your life better and you're moving up and you're going to make better for your family, but why not make everybody's lot a little bit better on your rise to fame and fortune? That only seems rational, doesn't it? Seems reasonable. But it is impossible. It is impossible to have any type of social justice without economic justice. It is impossible to be in the middle class if you don't have health security. If you don't have health insurance, sorry, not there. And I was talking to somebody today, and I was explaining, I was remembering a conversation I had with a woman who told me that she was making like 16 grand a year in the middle class, which, sorry, 16,000 is even at that time, was probably really close to poverty. But she was in the middle class because she didn't take any direct handouts. She didn't take any handouts from the government. She didn't get food stamps. She didn't get heating assistance. She didn't get any. And I think it was probably, and this is going to sound horrible, and I don't mean it that way, she probably didn't know how to apply for those programs, didn't know where, and probably didn't know she was eligible for them. And I was thinking today, she said she didn't take any handouts. And I was thinking today, did she do her taxes? And I can't believe that I haven't thought of that until this point. Did she do her taxes? Because I'm sure she got more back than she paid in taxes. And this drives the righties nuts. This drives the right-wing loonies absolutely berserk that we have this earned income tax credit. That someone like her who works in supporting a family gets money back, more money back from the government than she paid in. And I would say, kind of that's a handout. And I would love to know where she is today to see what her thoughts on that were. But we do that to prop up small business. We do that so that we can have a minimum wage economy and people can still have some consumption. And you go back to the Milton Friedman idea of having a negative or a social wage where everybody starts off with $6,000 at the beginning of the year. And, that's how much you get from the government or whatever to consume. A family of four would have $24,000 a year. You would be above the poverty line. And the more you work, there's a calculation that goes with taking some of that away. It's a long story. It's never going to happen. But that's what the earned income tax credit was based on. This idea that we have a social wage, this idea that you need to have X amount of dollars to survive in this country. And we do. And if we're not going to tie it to wages, we're going to have to tie it to something. But I was thinking about her today. Because occasionally I do. I think of that person who has this vision that they're somehow middle class. And I think about the people that we talked about last week who said that they're part of the 53%. You know, like the homemaker who doesn't have a job or the college student who babysits. I'm one of the 53%. Sorry, you don't pay federal tax. But I think about the other people who say, I'm working 60, 70 hours a week, and I'm struggling to make ends meet, but I'm one of the 53%. You should be one of the angry people who are saying, look, there's something wrong when I'm working 60, 70 hours a week without health insurance in this country, and I'm still unable to make ends meet. I'm just, you know, I read those, and I'm just flabbergasted, and I understand. Look, I'm as stoic as anyone. My mother beat it into me. You never show weakness. You never cry. You never put your problems in the streets. You deal with your problems yourself, and you keep it to yourself. I understand that. Very American, very, very American frame of mind. But now is the time where we have to kind of get over that a little bit, because there are so many people who are struggling, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, without question. You know, I thought about what you're talking about. Is it the American psyche? They're just, I don't know. It takes an awful lot for an American to really get to the point where they've had enough and they're really willing to go to the street and change your lives to fight for a cause. I don't know. Is that because maybe some of us have been spoiled in our lives by our parents? Is it because of the historic precedents that happened in this country? I'm not quite sure, but if you go to Europe, it seems that the people are very, very more apt to go to the street and challenge your government. Where here in America, maybe it's because we have this fantasy that the government is always right.
Well, I don't know about that. It's this. I think it's the belief of the ballot box more than anything. Because if you listen to the politicians, especially on the Democratic side, Ed Rendell, for instance, saying you came out, now go home, and then go back to the ballot box and elect Barack Obama. And you know, look, I'm going to go next November, and given the choices that I'm going to have, I will vote for Barack Obama. Because he's not Snow White or any of the other seven dwarfs. But at the end of the day, if we can push him in the direction to start thinking about some progressive changes, maybe it's more palatable. No. Anyway.
I think we have to figure out how to, first of all, I don't think we can allow the president to co-opt the movement, and we have to figure out how do we utilize this movement best to further the best interests of the country.
It will figure itself out. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com is where you go. If you got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, take your program on the go. You can also email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Tomorrow morning, 11:45, Capitol Rotunda, East Wing. They are having a rally on the voter ID suppression bill. It'd be interesting to head out there. Anyway, regardless, we'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous gray. Democracy is coming to the USP.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Doggone it. to stone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home.